increases.
Quickly, and they don't come.
The education committee will come back to order, and we can continue where we left off this morning. Senator Scogin, did you have?
I did have, Mr. Chair, thank you.
I know you.
I've got a couple more, and I'd like to start with one that's going to be on page 127, the members. It's where we did we changed the number on the review and comment.
Amendment number.
It's going to be an oral amendment.
I'm sorry, Senator Scogin, 120?
Page 127. I'm going to open it up just to be sure. And on line 6, you'll see that we raised our review and comment amount on construction expansion remodeling it originally started at $400,000. It went to $500,000, and in this particular mandate relief provision, we went to $1 million. Well, we got some some information on from day one. If we had had a index to inflation, the real number is just over $1.4 million. So I thought it might be appropriate to kind of catch up and put in $1.4 million there on an oral amendment. And I would move that.
We should get the department.
Strike a $1 million and go $1.4 million on line 6.
Okay, Senator Scogin moves on page 127, line 6, to delete the $1 million and insert 1.4. Is there anyone here from the department? Do we have anyone here from the Department of Education?
A lot of them.
The commissioners,
they don't want to admit it.
Welcome, Dr. Melcher. Did you happen to hear the amendment? It was a verbal amendment.
Mr. Nauman was just explaining it to me, Mr. Chair. Tom Melcher with the Department of Education.
The amendment is on relating to the review and comment, and we had increased the $500,000 to $1 million, and Senator Scogin's amendment would increase that to $1.4 million.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Does the department have any position on that?
Mr. Chairman, no, we've not formed a position on that. I know that the number has been at $500,000 for some time, so we think it may be appropriate to do an increase, and I don't think we have a position as far as $1 million versus $1.4 million. I think there was a fiscal note earlier on the $1 million where we had a slight levy impact on going from $500,000 to $1 million on a bill that had been introduced. So there could be some very small property tax implication that it relates to one-day bonds for districts that are on capital loans, and how we think there might be more of those districts doing that. I'm not sure that would be affected by going from $1 million to $1.4 million, but there could be a very small fiscal impact of that.
Would there be any savings on the department's budget?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think we would attribute an FTE or any kind of measurable portion. I think we've got some folks that are really overworked in that area. In fact, right now we don't have a person that's really full time doing review and comment. So this would give us a little bit of relief in terms of the review and comment. To be quite honest, we're not probably spending a lot of time on projects under $1.5 million anyway. We're looking more at the bigger ones in terms of focusing our resources on the larger projects.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. On Senator Scogin's oral amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Senator Scogin.
Thank you. And I do have one more, and it'll also be an oral amendment. If you would turn to page 43, I have gotten quite a bit of pushback on our desire to give school districts some flexibility in how many fire drills and other things, and I really was not necessarily married to that provision when we put it in our mandate bill. And if you would look at Section 19 and Section 20 on page 43, members, I guess I would go back to five, you know, take out the or replace the stricken language there. And then I believe you would also, no, I got to look on page, I got to look at one more location. I think we forgot to change it someplace, and I just want to make sure that we didn't.
Senator Scogin, would you keep the new language or the students involved?
And the students really should be involved in the drills, yes, Mr. Chair. I didn't realize that they weren't, but we heard some testimony that at times they did drills just with staff, which we'd like
idea.
The students to be involved.
Yeah. Senator Kolk?
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, maybe two is not the right number, but by leaving it at five, that's five lockdown drills, five fire drills, and one tornado drill with apparently all the students. So that's 11 different drills. Maybe two is not the answer, but five seems like a lot. So I'm wondering if Senator Scogin would consider three or...
Well, Senator Scogin.
You know, I would consider one a week, even 52 or whatever number... Whatever number will make the email stop. But I will
negotiate.
You know, the intent was to give schools some flexibility. We were at nine at one time, I know. Over time, it came down to five. And I thought two was reasonable, and I'm willing to go back to the stricken language.
Ms. Gallagher. This is an oral amendment relating to the school and charter school policy relating to lockdowns and fire drills.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. We oppose the change here, members. We brought you a series of mandates, over 100. This is one of them. What we get concerned about is when you list a certain number in statute, I know there's a lot of belief by people that there's some magic attached or some kind of guarantee of safety. And that's unfortunately not something that we can assure. Certainly Red Lake shows you that even a place that had federal dollars for security wasn't enough to keep their students safe. And this just takes time away from the student day. And when we're talking about rigor and standards and testing, it takes kids out of the classroom. And unfortunately, we need all the time in the classroom focused on the children's future that we can get. So we would oppose this, members, and really ask you, in a year where we're getting less revenue, we maybe need less mandates, too.
That's just because that's what we get by yet.
Doesn't make sense. Any other members? Senator Dahl?
Mr. Chair, I'd have to agree with Ms. Keller. Having been through most of those fire drills for the last 25.
With or without students?
Always with students. I think there becomes a level that you kind of plateau, and enough is enough, and it is disruptive. But I think two is plenty. I think two works, especially that we've added the lockdown drills in recent years. I think we're on the right track with the current language.
Ms. Keller?
Mr. Chairman and members, and the reason we would want to do one without the children is because staff needs to know what to do, where to go. I don't think you want staff members sitting there figuring out what entrance they're supposed to go out with the kids as, you know, the 30 children follow them down the hall. And, I mean, we need some organization to how we do this. So it does make some logic to have do one with staff so they're informed about what they're responsible to do. Maybe not all without children, but certainly one makes some logic that there would be some local flexibility to address those needs so staff are informed before the children get here. And keep in mind, members, this goes from kindergarten to 12th high schoolers, 12th grade. So how we handle our kindergartners in a lockdown drill is a little bit more sensitive than we do 12th graders and different. And so, Mr. Chairman, I just ask that there be some consideration that we do need to spend some time with staff on how they share these events.
When you look at the line, Senator Scogin, 43.20, the existing language says the policy must include at least. So if a district decides to do more, they could.
Mr. Chair, there are districts that do still do nine. I've had people tell me that, so you're right. It still leaves it open to do more if they want to.
Ms. Kelleher?
Mr. Chairman, Bloomington School District is a good example. They really felt the need, so they do five fire drills, nine lockdown drills, because they feel they're more comfortable with that approach with their parents and with their community, and one tornado drill. And so local boards are addressing it, and they are using their own local decision-making to take this as a base board minimum and go from there. And I suggest, Mr. Chairman, that Bloomington School District and Black Duck don't necessarily address things always the same way. So some local ways to address this issue would be appreciated.
Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe the proposal before us is reasonable, but I believe Senator Scogin should have that opportunity to make that motion, and he can tell those persons he fought the fight.
On Senator Scogin's amendment to increase it to five, yes? Very briefly,
I'll be very brief, Mr. Chair. My name is Wade Setter. I'm with the Homeland Security and Emergency Management Division of the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. And we are in favor of Senator Scogin's oral amendment. We've been working in the area of school safety for the past 2 years within the Department of Public Safety. And the reality of it is before we were reduced to 5, 5, and 1, which is the existing statutory language today, the reduction in fire drills came in order to increase lockdown drills. And I can tell you from talking to the State Fire Marshal Jerry Rosendahl, who is in Washington, D.C. today and couldn't be here, he also would be in opposition to any change from existing language and would be in support of Senator Scogin's amendment.
Is the problem that some districts are It says at least, I mean, in some districts, as the testimony from Ms. Kelleher was, that they do five anyway. And your opinion is that every district needs to do five?
Mr. Chair, we would suggest that five is a minimum. As was just previously mentioned, Bloomington does more. But there are districts that do fewer. And so it does become a challenge to really develop the capacity of the staff and the students in that school to respond to emergencies. That's really what it comes down to. And to do it with the expectation that children are present, which I know is one of the other amendments in language, clearly is important. But I would argue one of those drills to do without children present makes some sense, too, during that first week before school starts, to help develop staff capacity without the addition of children. If you were to reduce it to two and children didn't have to be present during one, then there was only one during the school year. This also language, as proposed prior to Senator Scogin's amendment, Mr. Chair, would also reduce the number of fire drills. And so that in and of itself is problematic as even a separate issue from the lockdowns.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, sir, it's one of the comments that was made to me about this issue was that, number one, that We haven't had deaths by fire in schools, but we have had shootings. That's the one area that we have had deaths in. But that normally those occurrences do not happen in neat times when kids are all in their classrooms, that they happen at unstructured times. And as part of the reason, too, to try to get different circumstances so that children will, learn the rules of where they need to go in order to... whether it's exit or whatever the plan is, that they do it, but and do it as unstructured time as well.
Mr. Chair and Senator, that is exactly it, because when we're talking about a lockdown, which we would traditionally associate with an armed intruder, as we've experienced, unfortunately, in the state a couple of times, but there's other events. What about the wild animal in the parking lot? I was up in Floodwood not too long ago. And when you illustrate it, maybe it's not the violence issue, but they had a moose out in the parking lot. Clearly, if they got in a school, that could be a problem.
It's cool.
Hazardous material spills. So isolating that school environment to protect in case of a hazardous material spill in a tanker truck or a railway that may be near the school. So the lockdown drills serve a far greater capacity than just dealing with armed intruders. It does come to an all-hazards emergency management approach to train not only the staff but the students too, so they respond appropriately in those very short periods of time they have to evaluate an emergency and then act upon it.
Okay, on the amendment that we have, comment?
Mr. Chairman, Grace Kelleher with the Minnesota School Boards Association. I believe the gentleman from Homeland Security raises an interesting question, that there are multiple emergencies schools have to respond to. Unfortunately, under this language, it says we have to do 5 lockdown drills. That's not moving children in a hazardous ammonia situation or when you've got a chemical spill. So can I suggest, if you want us to truly be prepared, that you take an all hazards or a little bit more, instead of a lockdown drill, which designates just one kind of emergency, that you give us a little bit more flexibility to react, whether it's anhydrous ammonia or whether it might be some other kind of emergency. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, would our gentleman from Homeland Security have any suggestions of what wording would be more encompassing and yet clear?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I think...
Please give me your name.
Wade Setter, Minnesota Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. I would concur that one of the challenges we have in the existing statutory language is lockdown drills are not defined. And so lockdown drills, when working in the particular profession of school safety, we look at a broad range of what we call universal procedures or school safety procedures that include shelter in place, lockdown. There's 2 different types of lockdown, which you may or may not be aware of. The evacuation drill is what we would traditionally associate with a fire drill. So there is a range of those. I would suggest to you that if we were to change any of that language with regard to the lockdown, then we would develop a definition so it makes it easier for us to, number one, provide instruction and guidance and technical assistance to school districts in developing strategies for drilling these particular different types of procedures.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I hope this amendment does pass, but would you be willing to work with developing some of that language that could be added in another step along the way?
Mr. Chair and Senator, yes, we would.
Thank you.
Okay, on Senator Scogin's amendment, and I think we appreciate both the information from Homeland Security as well as the MSBA. On the amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. Senator Roebling.
My amendments?
We have a technical amendment.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, there was a slight oversight on my part in preparing the Senate Files 672. So if you look on page 100, I failed to pull in this section when the drills were reduced from 5 to 2. So on line 24, the motion would be to strike 5 and insert 2.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I was going to point that out.
So moved.
Okay, Senator Wieger moves that amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Senator Roebling, do you have?
Did you already take the vote?
Yes,
sorry,
we did.
I didn't get a chance to say no. Okay.
it didn't pass. Mr. Chair, I have the A8 amendment.
The A8 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I could start explaining this because we saw this in another bill, and this is just a part of a bill. It was when Senator Dibble came in here, and he had a more comprehensive bill that included land use planning and a number of things. And you may remember that I made the comment that this was the only part of his bill that I liked. And so he asked if I would carry it as an amendment to our education bill, because it certainly does relate to education. And it has to do with the number of acres that are required for a school building, for a new school building, and also whether or not we should have a requirement other than what a school board proposes for renovating existing schools. Current recommendations, which a lot of districts are taking as rule, say that you need a certain size parcel of land for an elementary, and I think it's a 100-acre parcel of land for a high school. And this has been pushing these buildings further and further out into the country as they look for parcels that are that large. And I've really noticed this in my district as we build all these new schools. Almost every other year, each of my districts is building a new school building. And they continue to go out further. In some instances, it requires that they extend city sewer services, annex parts of townships, because they keep looking for these big parcels. And this language would say that the commissioner may evaluate the proposals but may not issue a negative or unfavorable review and comment under this section for a school facility based solely on acreage of the proposed school site. And also for the renovation, it would say that they couldn't base their recommendation or evaluation solely upon the ratio of renovation costs to the cost of replacement. Right now, I believe the recommendation is if it is going to be more than 60% of the cost to replace it, they should go with the new building. And we're just asking them not to do that. And then as the school board itself is considering sites, we're asking them to look at pedestrian and bicycle transit connections, and as well as the issue of what kind of services that the local unit of government might incur by choosing a site that is kind of outside of their regular service area. So that's on page 3.7 through 3.9. And I do have someone here who could answer questions on it, but I think we did cover some of it already in committee.
That Senator Dibble's bill was, I think, had a pretty good discussion. Any other questions that committee members might have on that? If not, all those. Does the department have? I'm not sure if you testified in the. Okay. Since it does involve the review and comment the process.
Right. Mr. Chair, Dr. Melcher just stepped outside, but we had discussed this a little bit earlier this afternoon that this amendment was coming. I think the amendment is fine. I think actually there was our department kind of worked with whoever and thought it was okay. So I think we're all right with it. It's just, I think the balance is some of the environmental things where if you build too much building and have too much concrete, you've got a lot of runoff. So some of it is runoff. Some of it is safety issues. But, you know, definitely, Dr. Melcher, why don't you come up here? And I was just saying that I think the department is fine with this. Are there some issues with it? Well, with any part of it. I'm
the Dr. Melcher, the amendment is the part of Senator Dibble's proposal that relates to the review and comment for schools. And that's the amendment that we have before us right now. We're just wondering if there's department had opinion on it.
Mr. Chairman, Tom Melcher with the Department of Education. I know that this was something we looked at for a fiscal note earlier, and the department struggled in terms of identifying if there would be a cost or what the cost would be. We were, I think, unable to come up with any sort of a fiscal estimate that that this could conceivably result in some additional school construction, which could have a could have a levy impact. We weren't able to, didn't feel like we had the data to do that. We have historically limited districts, both, you know, based on both the acreage and on the relative cost of buildings. And that the department could administer either way would depend on the level of legislature.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Nauman.
It's my recollection of the fiscal note that the department was fairly clear in saying that there would be a levy impact, but it just was not a measurable number.
And, Mr. Chair, I think there's a couple of issues. One of them is the sort of the size of the required acreage, you know, for a new building. The other issue is, as I think Mr. Nauman talked about, whether we right now we have a process where if a building looks like 60% or more of it is so badly in need of repair, you know, that there's some kind of a trigger that says it's probably less expensive to build new than to try to remodel something that has so much cost to it that may be more costly. So I think that's where. Okay. All right. So I'm sorry. Ms. Weber says that they did clean that up by adding solely. So that does give us some discretion on that.
Okay. Thank you,
Chair.
Senator Roblin.
And I think there could be potential for savings if you didn't have to have a site that was in need of additional municipal services, which I believe the districts usually have to pay for to bring those out to the site, that you might actually have some savings in that area. Your school boards are pretty fiscally conservative because they have to ask the voters to approve the bond issue. So I would think that they would be quite cautious about how they would look at renovations in particular.
Okay, on the amendment, any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted.
Mr. Chair.
It doesn't mean it doesn't work. That's the one they gave me.
The wood bat.
Okay.
Ask her.
Let me toss for a special room that I spoke.
Okay, Senator Roblin.
Mr. Chair, I have another amendment, but if I can't do two in a row, I'll wait.
Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's an oral amendment. It's very simple. It's on page 125. It's 125.21. And my motion would be, it's in the repealer section, would be to delete the second and 1.125A.18 and the comma.
What is it?
And I can explain what it is.
Okay. Senator Roblin.
I don't remember ever having any discussion about this in the committee. And so I was surprised when it was brought to my attention that it was in here. And what it does is it treats the non-public special ed kids, the current statute treats them equal to the kids in the public schools for special ed services. And if we take this out, they would still be eligible for federal money, but not the state money that goes with it for special ed services. And I believe we have someone here who could testify to that as well. But there is concern about eliminating that provision of law because it would change the way services are delivered to non-public students.
All right. Would you give your name for the record, please? And
my name is James Field. I'm the president of the Minnesota Independent School Forum, and for the last 14 years have chaired the Non-Public Education Council for Minnesota. We are in support of this amendment. It's a very big deal to the state of Minnesota. It requires districts to spend an equal amount of money for non-public kids with special needs, and it's a fairness issue. What I'd like to share with you is that there's This is going to hurt the private school kids that come from poverty and low-income families because they're just not going to be able to afford paying for the service. Most likely it'll cause them to transfer to a public school because you just don't get rid of special need problems that easy. For every child that transfers to a public school, it's really going to cost the state around $12,000 because these are kind of low-end students. And it'll actually cost the state more money than it would if just by cutting out those services.
Please give your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pete Knoll, Education Director, Minnesota Catholic Conference. And I, too, stand in support of Senator Roebling's amendment on this particular issue for reasons already articulated by Mr. Field. We have grave concerns about the implications of this, both from a fiscal point of view as well as an impact on families who have chosen a particular school. We have concerns that this may cause a tipping point for many families to need to take their child out, matriculate in a public school, essentially eliminates special education programming for children in non-public schools, in our estimation. So we would ask you to please reconsider that part of this bill.
Okay. Members, this was a provision that was in Senator Fulby's bill, which was the special education federal conformity proposal. And so I believe if there's somebody here from the School Boards Association, because I believe that provision, I don't think we dwelled on those repealers when we talked about that bill. So
Mr. Chairman, my name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. I brought my special counsel on special education who helped put this bill together. I will share with you that 125A18, if you remember the special ed task force you put in law 2 years, you sent them the first year and we didn't get all the way through the rules and you sent us back for a second year. Repealing this piece was 100% consensus of that task force. It was also 100% recommendation of a group of us that decided to take our time, go through these statutes, and see if we couldn't really clean up and enhance these federal statutes. And Senator Fulby has that bill. Mr. Martin did share with me that federal law states that we have to do. Excuse me. I'll let Mr. Martin speak to the members. He'll be more articulate.
Please give your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Peter Martin, Special Counsel to the Minnesota School Boards Association. The way the process works is first of all, under the federal standard, the school districts are required to spend a proportionate share of their federal special education money on children enrolled in private schools. And there's several different classifications, but these are students who are voluntarily enrolled by their parents, their family, in a private school. So they've made the choice that they generally, you know, prefer the private school for personal reasons over the public school, but then seek special education services in the public schools or from the public schools. And the federal law would say that the minimum that you're required to spend is the proportionate share of your federal money. And under the current statute, Section 125A18 has been interpreted to require, you know, the full provision of special ed as if you were enrolled in a public school. And the advocacy organizations here in Minnesota and the school districts are unanimous in saying that we would like to follow the federal standard.
Mr. Chairman?
Do we know what the fiscal cost of this provision is? Or fiscal savings?
Mr. Chair, members, I do not. I can't give you any hard numbers. I don't know.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Brown.
Morgan Brown with the Department of Education. We are in the process of doing a fiscal note on this, which I don't believe has been finalized. This language is actually, as you know, just mentioned, in a couple different bills, but we are projecting a net cost for this provision because of the reduction in special education services to students currently in private schools that will result in their parents choosing to transfer them to public schools from private schools.
Okay, Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, that was my question. I wondered if it was if the fiscal impact was already reflected in our spreadsheet, and if not, it appears that it's that information is on its way.
Senator Olson, it is not reflected. The only reflection of a savings under the special ed, or actually under the non-public pupil aid, is the savings that results from your. Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, when I first listened to Senator Roebling, I first thought it was that provision that we had spent a great deal of time on when we looked at the transportation issue, because we looked at repealing the requirement to transport special ed students from private school to public school. And after listening to the people talk about that they pay their taxes to and this and that, we as a group did vote that down. And we said, no, we wanted to keep in current with current practice. And so repealing this is inconsistent with what we as the committee decided around the issue of transportation. Then, you know, my fiscal hat was listening and thinking, oh, could we save some significant funding? And I thought that's not really necessarily even the right way to look at it. But I wondered that, and then listening to the testimony, I, too, concurred that we would end up having more costs, because if these special ed kids come back into our system, we are burdening our system with special ed kids and the costs and the what it takes to integrate those children back into our classrooms is not insignificant. So I would support the Roebling Amendment.
Any other information, Mr. Knoll?
Mr. Chair, a couple comments based on Mr. Martin's testimony here. First of all, back to that task force that spent 2 years on this topic, I'd like to point out that there was not a representative from the non-public school advocacy groups on that task force. And so it's kind of, without representation there. And the federal proportion required of districts would be 14% funding. So it's somewhere around 14%, somewhere in that vicinity. So it would essentially, the repealer would essentially decimate special education services under shared time to students matriculated in non-public schools. Thank you.
All right. On Senator Roebling's motion, which keeps the law the way it is. Any other? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Okay. Senator Saltzman.
Yes, I have the A36 amendment, Mr. Chair. And while that is being passed out, this is something that was in the original charter school bill. And in talking with Senator Stumpf about the bill that we have before us, we had a conversation that perhaps we needed to put part of this back in regarding building corporations. And one of the things that we've had a discussion about is how do we have greater sort of transparency in how building corporations operate, and also sort of looking at some, you know, responsible fiscal and like our policies. How we ensure that, you know, the lease aid is being used correctly, et cetera. So this provision reinstates the language that was in the original bill, in that it is different from current law, in that we recognize building corporations may be formed. The other provision was at 3 and 8 years, and this sets that a charter school that has been operated for at least 8 years is not in operating debt, may form a separate affiliated nonprofit, a building corporation, to construct or purchase a school facilities. And then there needs to be approval, and the sponsor must submit a supplemental affidavit to the commissioner stating that there's been a feasibility study on facility options, documents show the school's need, projected enrollment, school's financial plan, and that also that there are no other existing facilities, including those that could be, like, you know, renovated, are able for purchase or lease. And this would apply to buildings that are being purchased after July 1st of 2009. One of the things that we've had discussion about, and Senator Roebling just had her bill up, is talking about the fact that we should be encouraging our schools to perhaps use existing buildings before we build new or renovate. And charter schools have done an excellent job of using non-traditional buildings to be able to construct to be used in charter schools. And we've also seen where charter schools are buying existing school buildings. So can we encourage that before we allow them to build new? So this is putting something back into the bill that I think acknowledges the fact. I know the legislative that in the 2003 Legislative Auditor's Report, say that we should make a decision on one side of this issue or not. Either you can't have a building corporation, or if you do, what kind of reporting should we have? And a question that has come up is that right now the building corporations are formed, and that buildings are being constructed or purchased, and then they come for lease aid. So this is sort of having a process in place where there's some oversight from the commissioner, and that we make sure that these schools are stable before they start buying buildings. So I would stand for questions.
Okay. I had expressed some concern when we had the proposal before us, and I think I actually was not understanding the language, and I think this tries to address an area that would probably. It probably isn't the total answer, but it tries to get at an issue of what do we do in the case of those buildings. And Mr. Piccolo?
Yes. Mr. Chair, Senators, my name is Eugene Piccolo, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. We have been advocating for some time that there be establishment of some guidelines with regard to these building companies. As was already mentioned, the legislative auditor raised this in 2003 as a need to be addressed by the legislature. And so in terms of what the amendment is before you, we support the broad outline of it. Obviously, there's a few things we'd like to tweak in terms of wording and so forth in it. But in terms of setting some guidelines and so forth, we are very supportive of that idea, because not every school should be contemplating a building company or owning a building, and we believe people need to focus on building their program first before they start playing around with buildings.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Piccolo, and I appreciate your comment, and Senator Saltzman, thank you for your amendment. I just wanted to question you on line 1.10, the 8 years, and I've talked to people in charter school circles that suggest that might be longer than what would be preferable. And do you have any opinion on that? Is that the right amount? Too long? Not enough time? What's your...
Mr. Chair, Senator
Piccolo.
We would... The original amendment that was put in the charter bill had a two-tier system, and we'd like that because it really encouraged people to look at current buildings and reuse buildings rather than constructing new buildings. I think one of the things we're sensitive to with schools closing over the next few years, why would we be encouraging people to build brand new buildings when there may be buildings available, or also current other buildings that are existent in the community, either from the private sector and so forth? Personally, we believe that it should be a state policy to encourage people to reuse buildings rather than build new ones.
I think the language on line 1.11 addresses they can construct or purchase. So I think that option is there, I think.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, it's a school facility, which may not be as open to the flexibility that Mr. Piccolo was making. You might purchase another type of building with some remodeling would be an option that I think you were referring to.
Well, it maybe as we move along, we can figure out how to make the I think the overall idea was this was part of the original package of to address some of the issues. So, Piccolo?
Mr. Chair, we'd be happy to continue working to refine the language that's in this amendment.
Okay. All right, on the A36 amendment, any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Senator Salzman?
Yes, I just have one more amendment, very small one, Mr. Chair. If I may do the A22 amendment.
A22.
Right. And the A22 amendment, as it's being passed out, if you want to look at page 46, line 5 of the bill.
Page 42, line 5.
It's 46, line 5. This is in regards to appointments to the Board of Teaching. And the new language 46. States that it includes six teachers who are currently teaching in.
Excuse me, it's 46.
Right. 46.5. The Board of Teaching right now includes six teachers who are currently teaching in a school, one higher ed representative, and one school administrator. And what this amendment would do would state that the teachers who are appointed at the time, who are teaching at the time of their appointment, and who do not qualify under Clause 2 of the subdivision may continue to serve on the board. So the situation that we are looking at here is that if a teacher is teaching at the time of their appointment and then retires or gets another job, they could continue on the board. However, if a teacher changes jobs and then becomes a school principal, a superintendent, or teaches in a college, they then should represent that representative, not one of the teachers. And I believe someone is here from Education Minnesota who may be able to speak to this.
Okay, Ms. Allschweiger.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allschweiger, Education Minnesota. As the date goes on, my voice is getting worse. I think that this is a good balance to the language that the Board of Teaching is proposing, because they are allowing someone to continue on past their retirement, leaving teaching. And this is then another balance, so that if they decide not to, if they're going to jump from teaching to administration or higher ed, then, of course, they would not be representing the teachers in the K-12 system, and so they would then not be on the committee.
Okay, thank you, Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I have to think that this is consistent with the original intent of the change, and I think it just clarifies it.
On the A-22 amendment, any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. I think I'm catching up on my list here, so please be patient with me. Senator Phoebe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've waited for this all day.
I hope you weren't on the bottom of my list to begin with. So.
I had three bills to do today. I've done none of them yet, so I will be leaving here to Judiciary, and you know the routine. But for a newer person, this whole timing thing is a little much, so bear with me. I have the A21 amendment.
Senator Fulby moves the A21 amendment.
And I'll just say a few preliminary comments while you're getting that. This is, if you recall, when I brought section, which is Article 3 now in the bill, the special education piece to you, I said that, hold on, there will be another amendment coming, and this is the amendment I was talking about. It is the one that has to do with discipline. And again, it was agreed upon with all members of the education community, public and non-public representation, boards, advocates, the department, and others. It's a huge thing for us to all agree on this piece. Again, we're streamlining the process. We still will exceed federal law, but it's condensed and it conforms to what we have in the other body. So I appreciate your consideration, and I can go through some of the sections with you.
Senator Fobey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment before you does the following. In Section 1, it changes the definition of pupil under the Pupil Fair Dismissal Act to align with what is in special education law. Section 2 clarifies it is 15 school days and deletes reference to special education. And if I'm going too fast, members and Mr. Chair, please let me know. Section 3 places all the suspension and exclusion and expulsion language for students with a disability in one place, lessens the number of meetings, increases the threshold, and streamlines. It's very complex, and as you know, members and Mr. Chair, we deal with state law and federal law, and this is really trying to streamline the process so everyone understands it better, and mostly a lot less meetings and a lot less, hopefully, cost. For children with a suspension of more than 5 consecutive days or more than 10 cumulative days, we would follow what is federal regulations for 10 cumulative days, which is a meeting of the relevant members of their IEP. For children with more than 10 consecutive days or who are going to be expelled or excluded, we will follow federal regulations regarding manifestation determinations. We clarify that dismissal for one day or less if the child does not receive instruction will count not as a suspension but will when you count the cumulative days. And children will be provided alternative education services when they are suspended more than 5 days. Then we move on to Section 9, Mr. Chair, is an agreement on prior written notice and conciliation conferences. Section 18 simplifies the time period for hearing officers' decisions. And Section 19 clarifies the appeal of hearing officer decisions. Lastly, deletes the deletion of 121A.43 because we amended it, so we don't want to delete it. And that is it. And I'll stand for questions.
One question, I don't know if it is relevant or not, but if you look on in the omnibus bill, Section 3, we change, and this was a language relating to, from the department relating to the change from days to hours. And I'm just wondering if that causes any conflict. Dr. McQuay?
Mr. Chair and members, I guess the way I would see it is that 15 school days in one district is 15 school days in another, and it would be proportional to how they do hours in their district, and I don't know that there would be a conflict.
All right. Okay, any other questions, Mr. Deans?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Tom Deans. I'm legal counsel of the School Board Association. I'm here with Sue Abderholden from NAMI. We were some of the lead negotiators on these provisions. We wanted to tell the committee that these are been supported by both the school board side and by the advocate side. We have a couple of technical corrections to the amendment that we'd want to point out. One of the problems was is we picked up some of this language from the House, and they kind of misengrossed the thing.
Misengrossed.
It happens, you know.
Mr. Deans, the Senate will clean up that language from the House, or at least try to.
And Mr. Chairman, the changes that I'm going to suggest were part of the agreed upon changes. If you the first one would be on page 3.9 of the amendment. It would be to just delete that line. That by reason thereof, the way this is written, you basically, it says that the child has one of these disabilities, and by reason thereof, he needs special education. That needs to be in there. So we would ask that you delete line 3.9. On line 3.25, it should say page 111, strike line 28, and then take out, strike everything before the comma. So it just says page 111, strike line 28, and insert. And then on page, or on 3.31, it should be page 111, line 29, strike, quote, a conciliation conference. Then the language will line up, you know, where you're going, and all of a sudden it kind of dropped off in the middle of a sentence, and that wasn't what was supposed to work. That would reflect the agreed upon provision.
No.
Mr. Deans, before you move from that topic, could you just one more time, just to be sure that we have it, on line 3.9, delete that line. On line 3.25, after the comma, the first comma, delete line 28, strike everything before the comma.
Right.
And then on, and I'm not sure I got this, the last one, on line 3.31.
You'd strike the third word that says strike. So it'd be page 111, line 29. Then you'd say strike, quote, a conciliation conference, unquote.
Okay. Senator Fulby would include that in her motion.
Mr. Chair, I believe they also wanted on page or on line 3.25, you would delete line 28, comma, strike everything before the comma, but you want it inserted, strike line 28.
Yes.
Dr. McQuay.
Mr. Chair and members, it would read then, if you're looking at line page 111, if the parent refuses, the district must prepare.
One second.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I thought it was saying that if the parent refuses, the conciliation requirement is satisfied. I'm not sure I understand what's going on.
Mr. Chairman.
Please give your name for the record.
Yes, Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI, Minnesota. So after, on line 111.27 of the bill, it would say, you know, the parent receives notice under subdivision 3A, and then you'd strike if the parent refuses, and then you strike all of line 28, and then and the rest of that sentence, a conciliation conference. So you would have a new sentence beginning after subdivision 3A, which would read, a district must hold a conciliation conference. I hope that just
okay.
makes sense.
Okay, we do have that, and Senator Fulby would include that in her motion. Any other comments?
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Roger Arnson. I represent the Secondary School Principals Association. I visited with Peter Martin here and with Mr. Deans, and there's a piece in the amendment that wasn't intended. Where the language says this definition does not apply to dismissal from school for one school day or less, that piece should stay in the amendment. I mean that applies to regular ed kids, not the special ed kids. And the last half of the sentence should be stricken. But we use that first half if we suspend kids for less than a day. We don't go through all of the procedures, and the intention wasn't to lose that piece. The federal, I'm sorry, the special ed kids
on here.
Gets picked up on the next page on 2.24, and it works that way. So if you take off, if you keep that first part of the deletion, this definition does not apply to dismissal from school for one school day or less. We want to keep that.
Okay. Senator Fulby would also include in her motion on line 1.20 to reinsert the stricken language, this definition does not apply to dismissal from the school for one day or less, and then delete the remaining portion of that sentence up to each.
Okay. I mean, not delete the stricken language, just continue to delete the rest of the sentence.
We would delete except as provided in federal law for a student with disability. Okay. Please give your name for the record.
Mr. Chair and members, Amy Roberts with the Minnesota Department of Education. With respect to this particular piece, the department would prefer that if you're going to reinstate this language, that this definition does not apply to dismissal from school for one day or less, that you then also keep the part for a student with a disability to clarify that this piece of the definition is not going to apply to a student with a disability, and keep the distinction. No, I'm trying to keep the distinction clear between the general ed students and the special education students. Because if you cut it off at one day or less and then keep the remaining definition later in the provision, we're going to have conflicting language. So I think if we make clear here that this sentence does not apply to children with a disability, we can draw that distinction.
So what do you want to
do? Mr. Chairman, this is just one example of why this took us so long.
It is a very good example of why it took so long. I would say this definition does not apply to dismissal from one school day or less.
Mr. Chair and members.
Except as provided for. You could keep the whole sentence, really. But except as provided for a student with a disability.
Took care.
Okay.
But you're going to have two sentences.
All right.
Say two different things. And trust me. We don't.
Dr. McQuay.
Mr. Chair and members, the motion would be on line 20, reinstate the stricken language. On line 21, reinstate day or less, comma, reinstate except, and reinstate for a student with a disability.
It probably would read better to say except as provided in federal law. I just think if you're reinstate the whole sentence is going to be more clear. Would be my suggestion.
Okay.
Mr. Chair and members, on
Dr. McCoy.
Lines 20 and 21, reinstate the stricken language.
All right. Senator Fulby makes the includes this in her motion to reinstate the stricken language on line 1.20. All right. I won't ask any more questions. I think we have it. The A1 amendment. The A1 amendment.
A21.
A21. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted.
Thank
Senator
you.
Dahl. And then we'll get to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A15 amendment.
Senator Dahl moves the A15 amendment.
And I will be referencing, Mr. Chair, page 55. This has to do with staff development. And page 101. And while the amendment coming around, and I know we're trying to allow the schools a little bit more flexibility in the amount of dollars that they have, I guess I have some concerns about how we still give teachers the kind of resources that they need to implement the many more things that we're asking them to do. We've talked quite a bit this session about teacher quality, talked about professional learning communities, peer coaching, peer mentoring, collaboration. We talk about giving teachers time to get training in bullying, harassment, intimidation, CPR training. And we're asking schools to do more with less. The two parts of this particular amendment that's being addressed has to do with, you know, how the staff development money is directed, and then the other part has to do with the fact that the staff development dollars could actually go away for 2 years. So I guess that is a concern of mine. The days are still going to be there, but the quality of the kind of resources that teachers may have with those staff development days could be severely diminished. So that's, I think Ms. Allswager wanted to say a word on this particular section as well.
Ms. Allswager?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswager, Education Minnesota, and we would strongly support Senator Dahl's amendment. The current law provides for flexibility, and I just want to remind you that there's 2% that is required to be set aside. But if a majority of the school board and a majority of the teachers decide to spend anything less than the 2%, they may do so. In fact, our president of the Anoka-Hennepin Education Minnesota Union went to the Anoka School Board and said, you know, I think we should talk about this. So in some places, it is actually initiated by the teachers' union itself. They can spend 1% or 0%. It's interesting that if you reduce the money for staff development, that more money is available for salaries, and the opposite is true as well. In other words, if teachers are saying that they don't want to reduce the 2% staff development, that actually means that there's less money available for salaries. So if teachers are making the decision not to reduce the money, it is for professional reasons, for improving their profession. Staff development empowers teachers to make decisions about the professional development they need. In fact, they feel like they can take ownership over student achievement and making decisions about what needs to be done. We encourage our teachers to do research, to evaluate test data, and to make good decisions about what to do with staff development. We are afraid that if this does not pass, that staff development will take a backseat to other things. But think about this. Our plate is becoming more full. There is more accountability. We have more science requirements, math requirements. There's more testing. And those test scores, of course, are reported. And teachers just want to have some say in their professional development. And one last comment. QComp is out in a number of districts. And part of QComp is having the teachers and the administration working together to try to come up with professional learning plans, professional learning communities, or whatever they've decided upon. They're going to, the decision about whether or not they reach the criteria for an increase in pay for the professional compensation would then be, they would have no say in how staff development dollars are spent or what they need to improve their teaching. And yet they would be held to this standard for QComp. So we think that QComp, the high expectations, and just taking ownership for student achievement are some very valid reasons for keeping this law, and we support Senator Dahl's amendment.
Thank you, Ms. Allswager. Senator Hamm.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I would ask that we reject the amendment and preserve the language in the bill, and just want to recall to members' attention that we are subtracting a significant amount of dollars from the general fund in this bill, and I think it's incumbent on us to find ways to give maximum amounts of flexibility to school districts to manage what they have to deal with. And for us to impose a mandate at the state level requiring that 2% of that operating fund be devoted to a specific purpose really could potentially tie the hands of the district. I think school districts are as well aware as we are of the importance of staff development, how effective it is, and they also know the best way to do it. And so I would argue that the bill as it is written gives that flexibility in a time when it is really needed, given the lack of revenues, and given the fact that we believe that school districts are competent to determine their needs, we ought to preserve the language and reject the amendment.
Thank you, Senator Hand. Mr. Allswager, I think all the things you said are very true, but we're in a or close to a crisis mode kind of position in terms of our budget. And this provision is, I think it's just a two-year provision. It's a temporary provision. The the allocation, section 39 part. But the 2% is for 2 years, I believe. And we have this problem where we're making reductions in our district. If you reflect back over the years, I think we have made a temporary change here a number of times, and I, you know, I don't know exactly how many, but this is something that we have done to try to help keep our education system going, without. I personally think that this provision will keep more people employed in our school system than if we didn't have it. And I think that's a positive out there, is to keep as many people employed until we can get our feet back on the ground financially and be doing what we should be doing moving ahead. Ms. Alschweiger.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I certainly respect your statements. And I guess I would recommend then if you look at, excuse me, line 1.3 and 1.4, I mean, line 1.3 really doesn't do anything to help this financial crisis. And I think if you're trying to save and reallocate dollars, you can do that with 1.4. And I would recommend then if you're having a two-year sunset or two-year sunset on this law, that you might want to just keep 1.4 and pass that, but then make sure that you do not pass the language that is in the bill, not in the amendment. In other words, we would like to maintain the allocation of the revenue. Since you're taking away the 2%, then there won't be any allocation of revenue. So we would like to keep that language in law.
Senator Hann and then Senator Bono.
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe we should divide the amendment then and have two votes, one on Section 39 and one on 93.
Okay. Is that a motion?
I would move that we do that.
Senator Hann moves to divide the A-15 amendment, and the division would be between 1.3 and 1.4. Which part would you like to vote on first?
Mr. Chairman, let's go in order. Let's take 1.3.
Okay. The motion is to vote on. Actually, I suppose I should have asked Senator Dahl, since it's actually his amendment. Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, and I think I hopefully that if you're going to vote the whole thing down, and I wasn't getting a lot of support, I think that is a very reasonable compromise that after the two-year sunset, I do hope that you would leave. I hope that you would support 1.3 and later on. I would hope you support both, but if anything, please support 1.3. But I will. Did he make a motion?
Yeah. So we have.
No. No baby yet.
Which part?
1.3.
Okay. On the 1.3 portion of the amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. Motion does not prevail.
Division.
Okay. All those in favor of the 1.3, please raise your hand. Okay. All those opposed, please raise your hand.
You did? Let's count again. Two. One more time.
We need to do it again, guys?
Three.
All those opposed, raise your hand, please.
Opposed. Those opposed, three. Let's count again. Five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten,
11, 12. The motion does not prevail on 8-9. Okay. On the other portion of the amendment, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? No.
No.
Motion is adopted.
Division.
Oh, no.
Did you say the motion was?
The motion.
Mr. Chair, I think it's somewhat confusing here because the motion that you're doing is to, as I understand it, you're voting to approve the language in the amendment. So,
which is repealing
the set aside. Right. So a yes vote means that it comes out of the bill. Okay. A no vote means that it stays in the bill.
Let's. I think we'll start over on this one. On the 1.3. So members know, if you vote yes, the allocation portion would be taken out of the bill.
Correct.
All right. All those in favor? I would reconsider because I don't think if we didn't understand the second half, I don't think we understood the first half. So,
Mr. Chair, would you say it again?
Yes. All right, Mr. Nauman, please.
So Mr. Chairman, the amendment has been divided into two pieces. Both of these amendments remove sections from the bill. So a yes vote is to remove each section from the bill. So if you vote yes on line 1.3, you are voting to remove that allocation from the bill. You vote no, and it stays in the bill.
But you retain current law.
Correct.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, could I just make a suggestion? I would, and I, with all due respect to Senator Hand, if we voted for the second part first,
that might be easier.
It might be more logical because that if we take the money away, then maybe no one really cares as much about the first section as it's also suggested, and it might change the outcome of the other. I don't know if it would or wouldn't, but it changes the importance of it for sure.
Well, Mr. Chair, in either case, if you vote yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, you're voting for the amendment.
That's correct.
In either case. So just read the amendment. You're either supporting Senator Dahl's amendment or not.
Okay. On Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, and remember, again, while we may agree that the sunset is needed for flexibility, again, I urge you, if you were going to vote on 1.3 again, that when the language comes back, allow the districts to have a say in where that money is going. And that's all that line 1.3 does, is just give some direction as to where that money goes. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Excuse me. Dr. McQuay.
Mr. Chair and members, the allocation is in place to, and it instructs districts how to allocate the 2%. So by deleting Section 39, you're keeping the required allocation in place.
Okay. On the
Mr. Chair,
Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, so Senator Dahl, I just want to restate that because that was my understanding as well, that if we do what you've asked us to do on line 1.3, we're insisting that the school districts do their allocation, some to the building, some to this, some to that, and yet what you said is you want, and I thought that's what I heard, you actually want flexibility. Once the sun sets back, you wanted flexibility with the money, which is what I support. It's very prescriptive. If it is, actually. That's what Senator Dahl and Ms. Alschwager, that is what Dr. McQuay just said. We're stuck then with the very rigid allocation if we follow this amendment.
Maybe one suggestion would be to have Senator Dahl to withdraw this and just offer the deletion of the Section 39 as an amendment. Or actually, yes. If you just offer this deletion of Section 39, and if that prevails, you'd end up with the 2% two-year set aside, which would allow districts the savings without changing the formula.
If he withdrew the amendment at that point.
Yes. So, I mean, Senator Dahl, would that...
I will, Mr. Chair, I will take your direction.
Okay. All right. Senator Dahl moves to delete Section 39. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign?
No. Oh.
Motion prevails.
Division.
Division. I knew that was going to happen. All those in favor of Senator Dahl's motion to remove Section 39, please raise your hand. All those opposed, please raise their hand. Motion prevails on a 10-8 vote. Okay. And then you can, we will go back to Senator Dahl, was it your intent to not deal with the other provision?
Mr. Chair, I will deal with it. I guess if we might as well vote on it.
Okay.
I know how it's going to go.
Senator Dahl moves the deletion of Section 93, and that is the 2% staff set aside. Two-year. All those in favor of that, you vote yes, that means you're not in favor of the 2% set aside, relaxing that for 2 years. So yes, that's what a yes vote means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. Members, we're going to go back to Senator Scogin. We have a glitch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm going to take you back to page 127, line 6. Mr. Nauman did his Boy Scout duty and found the fiscal note. Mr. Nauman, could you just give me a brief description of what we've uncovered?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members. Sometimes this happens when the agency is asked to prepare a fiscal note on the same topic at two different points in time as they take the opportunity to think about it a little bit further, they discover a different number, and that's what has transpired here. We carried no cost for the change to $1 million, and as Dr. Melcher testified, the cost would be virtually the same at 1.4. His memory served that it was about a $250,000 levy impact. In reality, that provision in the House fiscal note carried a $250,000 aid impact for each year. So that means that the bill as it stands right now is $500,000 out of balance. It'd be great to carry the Senate number off the Senate fiscal note, but I think we've discovered that they're going to unsign this fiscal note and go back and redo it. I think they just didn't realize that the Senate fiscal note was still sitting out there with an incorrect analysis.
Mr. Nauman, you suggest to go to $1 million.
Mr. Chair, I don't believe that would make a material difference in the fiscal note because although they priced it at 1.4, Dr. Melcher's testimony was that it's immaterial either way. If it's a million or 1.4, it would still carry a $500,000 impact.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Nauman, I think your recommendation is that for now we just take it back to 500,000.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scogin, of course, I'm loath to give you recommendations on these kinds of things. my advice is twofold. You can either remove the provision and then we're back in balance, or you can instruct us to find a place to save $500,000. There's an easy way and a hard way, and it's up to the committee what you want to do at this point.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we remove the provision.
Okay, I believe technically it would be to delete Section 5. Perhaps we'll back up. Having voted on the prevailing side, I move that the amendment that was adopted be reconsidered at 1.4. And we will have Senator Scogin. So move that.
So moved.
On that motion, is it understood? All in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Adopted. Senator Scogin.
Yeah. Now move to delete Section 5 of Article 4.
Okay. Is there any further discussion? Not. All in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Adopted. Thank you. I believe, Senator.
What did you say? Delete Article 4?
Section 5.
What happened?
So the discussion on the 500,000, it didn't happen.
Section 5, Article 4.
Yes. You deleted
Section 5.
Did I get the right one, Mr. Nauman?
Section.
Mr. Chairman, as I understood the motion, as I recorded it, it was the deletion of Article 4, Section 5. Yes.
Right.
Okay. That's what you voted on. I think that was the intent.
Okay. I believe Senator Koch is next, followed by Senator Clark. Senator Koch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I could, I have two amendments now. maybe I'll start with the easier one, if I could. I have the A16 amendment. And the A16 amendment.
And Senator, would you mind if both amendments were distributed?
That's fine. The A16 and the A10.
Both amendments can be distributed.
I'll start with the A16.
On the A16 as it's being distributed. Senator Koch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, this comes out as a result of the Dahl amendment that we just passed, is my understanding, because with the deleting of Section 39, then it sets creates a little bit of an issue for the section above it, which on page 55 is Section 38, I believe. And perhaps Dr. McQuay can explain a little bit, but yes, so Section 38, which talks about being able to use staff development funds for CPR, basic first aid, we'll need to do the A16 amendment to kind of make the bill complete.
Mr. Chair and members, if you'll recall, Senator Koch had a bill heard in this committee that first on page 55, lines 8 and 9, included allowing basic first aid, including CPR, and the use of AEDs as in part of the staff development. And the second part of that bill was before the money is set aside that any amounts be spent for first aid and CPR. And that bill was passed by the committee. And so what is in front of you now is the second part of that Senator Koch bill, which on was not needed if the allocations were being deleted. But now that the allocations are back in place, it is was the committee's will at the time of the passage of Senator Koch's bill to include this part in A16 as well.
Questions or discussion? There being none, we ready to vote on the A16 amendment. All in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Adopted. Senator Koch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps this one will go as easy. The A10 amendment. Mr. Chair, what struck me and what struck me all day is we spent, I think, 4 or 5 hours in amendments. We haven't really gotten to the what I consider the 800-pound gorilla in this bill, and that's the funding. And when I look at the bill, the first thing that hit me was almost $1,200 in the biennium cut per student. The second thing that hit me, usually when we get these runs, I take out my ruler and I have to, I follow down for my school districts. But it wasn't really necessary with this bill because the cuts are across the board. And here's my concern with that is that many of my schools and many schools throughout the state, when we receive funding, we receive considerably less funding from the state. And we've talked about this in numerous discussions about equity in our funding formula, and we've been doing a lot of work in that area. But in this bill, when it comes time for the cutting, the schools are all, a student is a student is a student. And a percentage, the for schools, and I'll use an example, St. Michael Albertville, they're on the bottom three for receiving state funding. I believe it's around $6,300 to $6,500 per student is what they receive from the state. Well, a $663 cut in 2010 is a much larger percentage cut for St. Michael Albertville as opposed to another school. And so what this amendment does is it makes it more proportionate. It does the per student cuts based on the percentage that they receive in state funding. So it's really, this bill is really about equality, Mr. Chair and members. Perhaps if we hear from Brad Lundell with Schools for Equity in Education.
First, if members have questions, there'll be time for discussion. Mr. Lundell.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have a couple documents that I'd like to have distributed. And it's with a fair amount of consternation that I even get up here tonight, because I know the difficulty that you've gone through in putting together this bill. But as many of you know, in Schools for Equity in Education, we're not an organization that benefits greatly from categorical funding. And the problem I see with the Senate's provision in making its reductions is that it has chosen to protect categorical revenue at the expense of the general formula. And that, I believe, is indicative of a pattern that has taken shape, I think, over the last 10, 15 years, not in this body, but in the entire state formula, where the basic formula has become not an expression of what it takes to fund the average child in the state, but has really become a hub by which categoricals are calculated and distributed. If you look at the document that I put together that kind of bears this out, every year I do rankings after the legislative session that shows the rankings of districts based on general education minus referendum minus QCOM, general ed minus referendum, and then all general ed. And this includes, I know that you pull QComp out of general ed, so there's some apples and oranges going on here. But if you look at, I put the C districts in bold. As you can see, if you look to the far right column, which is just your basic state formulas and how the state formulas unfold for C member districts, only 7 C districts are above the state average. The rest of the C districts are below the state average. And given the way that the Senate bill is proposed, those districts will be carrying a greater share of the correction. In other words, a larger amount of their general fund or the money that they are generating through the basic formula, because there's not much categoricals, they're going to have a larger percentage of their general fund going to correct state budget problems. I've somehow find that troubling, not only for my districts, but troubling from a public policy standpoint. I was talking the other day with a couple of senators, and it seemed that former Senator Kenrick Scavel used to come in with a bill here every year that said if a student was a student, and he'd be roundly derided for dividing the whole pot up and making a student a student. We didn't even support that. We believe that there's a time for justifiable cost differences between districts, compensatory sparsity, transportation sparsity, but those things have to be kept in mind. As we're making this, that is money, and that is money that is distributed to districts. To simply look at taking those dollars off the table in the correction of the state budget deficit here, or the cuts that you're putting into place, I just think it's just bad public policy. And as you look, now Senator Bonner, if you'll look at the far right here, I can understand why Minnetonka doesn't want a referendum cap, seeing that they're the 339th of all districts as in generation of general fund revenue. You get no categoricals. But you look again, Senator Cook talked about St. Michael Albertville, Prior Lake is another C district. All the C districts are in bold. For the last 5 years, Schools for Equity and Education has been involved with the other education organizations, particularly Parents United, Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and the Minnesota Rural Education Association on redesigning the school formula. I haven't been able to get much helium into that concept on this side of the street. And I don't know why that is in particular, but this shows again that our general ed basic amount means next to nothing. And that has got to change. And I'll stand for questions. The other thing that I wanted to put out here today is that, you know, the C districts oftentimes get this reputation of your ex-urban districts, it's all tall cotton out there, Pleasant Valley Sunday, blah, blah, blah. But if you look at the foreclosure rates in these districts that are represented by Senator Phoebe, Senator Cook, these are C districts. These are C counties, counties with C districts, high levels of foreclosures. I think it's very, very important to remember that that's happening, that our districts that were depending on growth, now have empty cul-de-sacs. Growth was the only way these districts got money, and that is drying up. And now we're being expected to take a bigger hit in our general funds. Frankly, it's very problematic.
Any questions? Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, just a comment, Mr. Lundell. And, you know, of course, we all go to our own districts, and so I go to the back page where all of my districts are. And so, you know, I'm very sensitive to what you're saying, and it is a tough with the way the aid levy formula is structured. And so I am always an advocate at this table for some of the things you're talking about. But with regard to why this side of the street has not been open to the kind of restructuring the formula that you've been advocating for is we this year don't have the, you know, however many billion it would take to make sure there aren't winners and losers when we redo this formula. And so I thought that it would actually be irresponsible of us to, in this environment, tackle some of the funding reform that was needed. So given where we find ourselves, I think all of us, and I have to acknowledge, you know, Senator Stumpf, our chair, for, you know, doing everything he could to try and do this in the most fair way possible. And so if Senator Koch, and you're suggesting there's another option for fairness, and, you know, this committee is listening and considering, but I just want to go on record that that it isn't, you know, other that we are where we are because of our economy.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, I can accept it's very difficult to talk about reform given these economic times. But I don't know if it was Rahm Emanuel or Ben Franklin that said, never waste a good crisis. And I think that we do need to put these things on the table, and we do need to talk about them. Hopefully this economic downturn won't last forever.
Senator Brillett.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Lundell's essentially making the point, and this is complicated to follow, he's making the point that when funding goes up, because of the categoricals, things don't go up evenly. They go up larger for some districts than others. Your bill here today that you brought forth to the committee is across the board and now is treating districts the same. So it seems that it's a one-way street. He's making that case. I'm wondering, Mr. Chairman, can you tell me, is he right?
Senator Grillock, I think there were several reasons that we used the approach we did. First of all, we're dealing with a whole host of factors. And I think a good example was just yesterday morning when we started working with the bill. And by the time we got done with our committee meeting, we had new instructions from Washington, D.C. as to what we could or could not do. The approach we used gave us an opportunity to react quicker and try to deal with the changing nature of what we're going through. I think in terms of the differentials or the categoricals or the nature of certain areas in education, I think is one that is difficult. Obviously, when you deal with programs relating to poverty or relating to minorities or relating to ELL, relating to disabilities, I think those areas are difficult because I think they tend to get lumped in together, and then you just kind of take a look at total revenues versus the actual revenues that we have, let's say, on the in the formula. There's no, like I said yesterday, there's no sugarcoating what we're doing. It would be a whole lot better not to have to cut $972 million out of our education funding. I think that it's not an easy for any one of our members or anyone that's sitting in this room or any one of our school districts to be losing dollars rather than trying to. You know, you can pick up the paper, any paper or any news item, and our schools are cutting, making cuts out there. So it's not easy. Senator Grillett.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I get a little fired up about this issue. I don't speak up a lot in committee, and I'm no expert in education finance, but about 8 years ago, when I was in the other body, I pursued some legislation that focused in on one piece, the concentration factor, of one of the categorical aids, compensatory. And it was, in my opinion, it was very skewed in a mathematical way that, you put certain money in the formula, and it just the way it was structured very cleverly, and I argued the point, and of course I lost, and I was excoriated as everything from hating the poor, racist, everything. The Minneapolis Star Tribune did an editorial specifically on me, said I was Robin Hood in reverse, stealing from the poor, giving to the rich, and I wanted just to defend my district and say I want a little more equity in the funding. And Senator Koch is offering up an amendment in defense of her districts, and my district is number 317 on the list. I understand that you've come forth and your plan was to cut education funding by $970-some million, and you're doing it in a way that exacerbates a problem that, that I argue against when we're putting money onto the formula, that we increase this gap further than it ought to be, and now you're locking it in as we go down, as you're proposing to go down some. It's unfair, it's unjust, and I think you should accept the Koch Amendment. Senator Bonner mentioned that she's sympathetic to this. I hope that she votes for her districts and does the right thing, and I hope all of us, do that. There's some around the table here. I don't expect to vote for this based on their districts and such. But I just would hope that we would vote our districts, not any other reasons, and pass this. I think the Koch Amendment is the right thing to do.
Senator Gerlach, all of the districts that receive sparsity will end up carrying a larger portion of that burden. We did do this last year when we added the $51 per pupil, and we used this approach to add it directly to every district and across the board evenly. And that's the approach that we used on the reductions. And obviously the add backs are done the same way. They add back on the same way as the reductions are. So it will have an impact on some districts that are quite sparse I can think of those districts, the reservations and the number of areas that don't have, that do get higher amounts of either sparsity revenue or compensatory revenue. So, somebody else, Senator Saltzman.
Yes, perhaps a question, Mr. Chair, for staff or Mr. Nauman. Could you tell me what are the categoricals that are impacted by the Koch bill or the Koch amendment? I know that obviously compensatory is in there. What other, and sparsity, what are the other categories? Because I know that some of them are need-based, just to get a sense of all the categoricals.
Mr. Chairman and member, Senator Salzman, I guess I think about this amendment a little bit differently. It's not the categoricals per se. There are a whole collection of categoricals, and I can go through them if you'd like, that collectively generate a district's general education revenue. And what the Koch amendment does is use the general education aid minus referendum as a proxy for distributing the dollars. And the categoricals that you asked me to mention, extended time revenue, gifted and talented revenue, compensatory education, training and experience, although there's very little of that left, elementary and secondary sparsity revenues, we generally think of those together, the operating capital revenues, transportation sparsity, equity revenue, of which there are four components. Remember, we talked about those when we went through the briefing at the beginning. We then have transition revenue and then QComp.
Okay. Senator Saltzman?
So I guess I know I raised this question yesterday, and this is a very, very delicate issue. One of the things that I have seen is that with the federal dollars coming in, that they are targeted to specific districts based on some issues. And so, Senator Koch, I guess I would look at this amendment and perhaps be more supportive if you limited it to the general formula and compensatory, because it feels that we are perhaps, and again, it's an equal cut based on your percentage that you receive, but there are some dollars going back to those districts. It's not just an issue about my school districts, but I think it's that we might be able to express to those districts that are getting a cut that we are acknowledging some of the federal dollars coming in. And I totally understand that these districts struggle. And I've always been very supportive of funding and haven't done the Gerlach Amendment. In fact, I think at the time I was lobbying Senator Gerlach and told him maybe that that was going too far, a whole bill. But just to acknowledge that there's other revenues coming in. And I'm not saying I would support, but I'd be more open if we could somehow get a sense of there are some other dollars. And I do want to express to Senator Stump, you have done a very, very excellent job with this bill. And if we had had some of that information that's coming out from the federal government, we're constantly trying to adjust this bill. So you have done an excellent job on trying to balance across all of our budget areas. You've had a very difficult job, and we are concerned that we have to cut these programs, but we're trying to be respectful of other areas that impact children and families in health and human services in some of those areas. So this is a very difficult task.
Okay, Senator Cole.
And Senator Stump and Senator Saltzman, I'm open to that. What I'm trying to say with this amendment is basically, as we go up, so should we also go down. I'm not trying to target actually any kind of categorical. I'm just saying that if we cut evenly across the board, as we're doing in this bill, we exacerbate an already unequal situation. And we are tasked by the Minnesota Constitution to educate each child equally. And there's a great disparity in the fundings that different schools receive. And by cutting across the board in this manner, as has been done, that disparity widens even more. So I'm not sure if Senator Saltzman maybe has some language that will help, but that's what I'm trying to get at in this amendment.
Senator Bonhoeff and
Mr. Chair, Senator Saltzman, Senator Koch, and members, one of the things that troubles me about this bill is it specifically in both conversations, you're only talking about aid. So we're talking about a proportional cut, but we're only talking about aid. And the way that we have over many years created our formula was a mixture of levy and aid. And yes, my districts don't get much aid, but that has to do with the property wealth of my districts. And so if we were to really go down this path, what we would be doing is we would take the cut just based on the aid part, and so those districts that are heavy on the referendum, they would hardly have any cut. And so while I'm open to looking at a proportional share of the cut based on total dollars received and think that there's some logic to that from a mathematical perspective, that there does make some sense in some form or another. If you add it all up and you say, well, if you get this percentage, then the cut would be this percentage. But I think that it's actually the wrong direction to take out those referendum dollars, because that is what we have as a legislature approved for many years as the total dollars. If we want to, stop being so dependent on the referendum, that's great. Then we should develop a formula and policy on that. But to arbitrarily, at this moment in time when we're cutting, say that those referendum dollars shouldn't be figured in as everything a school district gets, I think is missing a commitment to each and every child. And I remember when I was on the Hopkins Legislative Action Coalition, that was the cornerstone of serving on that commission, is that while you were there to advocate for your own school district, you also had to say that you were there for each and every student in the state.
Senator Therese Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wish we had more time to talk about this, but what I wanted to say is that I know you put a lot of time, and the staff put a lot of time, a lot of members put a lot of time into putting this proposal that we've been reviewing. We're being asked to change all of that. And maybe, that's not such a bad idea. I don't know if we can do all of that conversation and redo all of it without really knowing how it impacts our districts and how we can run tables so that everybody would know. I don't think we can do that. But I think what is very concerning to me is kind of the tone of the conversation, particularly for people who come to testify to say, well, that district and the other and this region and more people have foreclosures in my district and in your district. I have to tell you, if I bring my district map into this, I may put you to cry. But I don't think that I'm here only to fight for Minneapolis children. I think I came here to figure out a solution to this big problem. And I completely agree with you, Senator Koch. We totally need to look into the needs of all of these districts, and we do not have enough money to deal with the problems that we have in education. So I would like to say, Mr. Chair and members, that we need to put a committee in place to work on this and really deal with what is that we need to do with our formulas and how do we need to fund education in the future in this state if we really want to work for all of our children without saying at the last minute, you're taking my money away and putting it in your district. So tomorrow I'm going to come back with another amendment and I'm going to try to delete this. And I don't think that's good policy. So, I think it's our job, Senator Koch, to fight for our districts, and I commend you for that. But it's just that at this point, I am not sure of how this proposal actually will impact my district, and I would like to ask the staff to run the table so that we can start the process all over again.
Mr. Mr. Chair.
Senator Koch.
I appreciate all the comments. And perhaps what I'll do, I can sort of see by the tone of where this is going that this is not. So I'll save the staff some additional paperwork, and I will withdraw the amendment. However, it is certainly a discussion that we need to have. Senator Bonhoeff brought up the inequity and then said, well, but in my districts we have higher referendum. My districts are hitting a double whammy in that we have property tax poor. So we not only receive very low numbers in state aid, but we're property tax poor. And so I'm very interested, and we've worked really hard on the equity and education. We have a committee, actually, and I'd like to see that continue. Yes. This year it's been difficult because of the, given the situation. But so I will withdraw the amendment at this time. But this this issue doesn't go away, and I hope it doesn't go away. We need to have this discussion. And, again, the Constitution is Constitution tasks us to have this discussion and to educate each child equally. And I, in my opinion, we're not doing that in the state of Minnesota at this time.
Thank you, Senator Koch. Senator Folby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I really, Senator Koch, I really admire you and appreciate you for bringing this up, and I would like to be part of that equity, whatever it is. I haven't heard about it yet, so I'd like to be added to that list and also that SWEAT team that you're having earlier today. But this is a huge issue in my district and all over the state, and it needs to. I believe it's the elephant in the living room, and was hoping to come down and hear some discussion about this, so I would love that to happen. It needs to happen, and I would like to be a part of that.
Thank you. Senator Koch withdraws her amendment. Thank you. Senator Roebling and then Senator Hamm.
And I know the amendment is withdrawn, but it has been really frustrating. The difference is that students, it's almost like what the students are worth in different districts. And, you know, I'm just looking at this list here, and a student in Prior Lake gets $2,853 less than a student in Minneapolis. If you have 20 kids in a classroom, that's $57,060 difference for that classroom. $57,000. That's really big. And, you know, when we just take it off the formula, it really is an inequitable way to do it, because the way we have it set up right now isn't fair. And to think that we're going to just evenly take it off without doing a percentage, as Senator Koch was suggesting, is really, really disappointing. And I don't know that we should wait till next year. Our districts are going to be in a lot of trouble by then.
Thank you, Senator Koch. I believe Senator Clark has an amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I actually have two, and they're short. I hope they're short. Well,
each amendment be distributed?
Yes. Well, one is verbal, the other isn't. The one that is a cleanup is the 836. And members, this is that's somebody else's.
How about the oral?
How about the 835? That's actually what we really want. If you go to page 138, this is some cleanup from this morning at our early childhood center. Olson and I found one more place that the word all could be an issue. And so we're deleting the words all in the QRIS. And as you're getting this, that's the other thing the amendment does is, as we created the office, what was supposed to be in the amendment this morning was what we had in the bill that we saw before, which was transferring the duties, and that just got omitted from the amendment. So it transfers the duties that we had talked about previously, and it modifies the word, takes out the word all, and makes appropriate modifications.
Still being distributed, but as it's being distributed, questions of Senator Clark. Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Senator Clark, it kind of jumped. It was another all that jumped out of me in your amendment. If you pick the sentence out and read it by itself, it says all positions in the Department of Education are transferred to the Office of Early Learning.
That was,
I don't think you really mean that. You mean
that
all positions that are related to early childhood, I think.
Yep.
You need to qualify that, or
that
you're going to have one
too,
humongous department.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, Senator Clark, I think what we had done before, all positions in the Department of Education related to early childhood education.
That's my recollection too, Mr. Nauman. We're all moving fast.
Okay, that's incorporated in the author's A35 amendment. Further questions? If not, all in favor of the A35 amendment, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Adopted. Senator Clark.
And then the other one is on, this will be the oral one, is on page 62, section It's Section 45, Article 2, Section 45. It starts on 61 and it goes to 62. Members, we had deleted something that I think is really pretty important. We're in the process of cutting education, and this deleted the report that gave us the information about how much it costs the school districts to actually do the things we're asking them to do. So I think that since we're cutting education, we may want to revisit that, because perhaps we actually want to get the information from our school districts about how much it would cost them. And the part that we might get a little bit glazed over by the MCA2s and all of that, the critical parts are 62.18 and 19, which is the amount of expenditures the district requires to attain the targeted student passage rate. We just spent a bunch of time talking about making reform and funding reform and trying to make sure that our school districts have what they need, but we don't have good information about how much it's costing them. This is information that if we got from the districts might make our goal a little bit easier to attain.
So, Senator Clark, I believe you moved to delete Section 45. Senator Hinn.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm wondering if I think wasn't this one of the School Board Association and
Senator Hinn, I believe you're correct. Is this one of the 100 or more mandated recommendations?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hand, I believe it is. And there's plenty of things that I think we all agree with and we may feel uncomfortable with that we're doing, this is information we've asked for the from the district
Section
so we
45.
Can make good decisions. It's hard for us to make good decisions 61. If we don't have an idea about how much it's costing them. Otherwise, perhaps after these cuts, they're just fine with it.
Well,
I'm guessing they won't be.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hand.
Could I ask someone from the School Board Association to come and tell us how this amount is obtained in school districts currently?
Yes, you did. Who would like to appear from the MSBA in defense?
And as she's coming up, Mr. Chair and members, I think that right now we're not having people actually adequately follow this, so we may not be getting good information. But I'm hoping after they're cut that maybe they will decide we should know how much it's costing.
Okay. And please identify yourself for the committee, and we are aware of the mandate issue, but also, as Senator Clark pointed out, the value in this at this point as well.
Mr. Chair, my name is Kirk Steinwein. I'm on staff of the School Boards Association. Could you please repeat the question for I'm
sure.
I apologize.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Steinwein, we have language on page 62 of the bill that's being deleted, current language.
6214.
6214 to 6219 that is being deleted that requires a report to be produced. One of the things in that report would have the school district report the amount of expenditures that the district requires in order to attain the target student passage rate, and I'm just wanting to get some testimony on how that number is calculated in school districts today.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
State your name, Mr. Kite.
I'm sorry. I'm Charlie Kite, and I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, representing the superintendents. At best, this calculation is a wild guess. I'll just rest my testimony right there.
And Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hinn.
Mr. Chairman, and I'll confess I knew the answer to that question before I asked, having served on a school board, and I think others know that too. And that, to me, is the reason why this should be stricken, is that the kind of data that we get in the report is of no value if we're really going to try to answer this question. Because what we have are school districts that are in a whole bunch of different ways coming up with a number to conform to the requirement of this law, but it is meaningless with respect to having being of any aid to us to determine how much money you need to reach the targeted student passage rate. And so, therefore, that's why this should be stricken, and we should preserve this and ask you, therefore, to reject Senator Clark's oral amendment.
Ms. Neuschein, did you have testimony?
No, I think Mr. Kite summed it up pretty well. I think it's the issue that was one of our mandate repeals.
On the mandate, a wild guess at best, Senator Baranoff.
Mr. Chair, I want to remind members that in Senate File 10's first introduction, this provision that's now stricken was actually in that, and the rationale behind having it in that is because we are continually expressing our commitment to having every student reach a certain level of achievement, but I don't think that we are doing enough analysis about what it would look like to accomplish that. And so I agree, they don't know the answer to that question, but maybe that's part of the problem. Maybe we should be looking at what does it take to really intervene with somebody. Is, you know, now we've got this summer success program. What is that? Isn't that part of making sure everybody's proficient? What if you had, you know, trigger points where you intervened earlier? We've talked about that. I think it's an important exercise, and perhaps coming to the conclusion that it's a guess might be the most, you know, beneficial thing that all of us could learn. Because, boy, if we, you know, have a goal that we want to accomplish, we ought to be spending more of our time looking at what would it take for us to get there and what does that cost?
Sarah Clark, closing argument, and we're going to vote.
I think members and Senator Hand, I mean, I have been personally concerned that we don't get very good information. And on lines 62.14 and 15, it says, in a manner prescribed by the commissioner. Perhaps the commissioner needs to give some more specific guidance to help the districts in thinking this through. Again, we are looking at cuts that pain all of us. I'm guessing that the districts aren't going to think that's enough money. Perhaps they'll take this a little bit more seriously, and perhaps the commissioner could give them a little more guidance.
Sarah Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if Mr. Kite or someone else could give us a sense of what kind of data they could readily collect for us, because it is very frustrating. Can you tell us, for example, how much you spend in remediation? Could you get that easily? Could you get information on how much you spend to comply with whatever the testing requirements? Is there some specific things that you would be able to access without, you know, a whole lot of work that would at least give us some sense of where our dollars are going?
Mr. Craig.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I was trying to be the shortest testimony fire tonight, but I may be failing here. The problem with the passage rate report is that it's a relatively simplistic request that asks you to very broadly report, and it in the end, the data that you get at the state level, because it comes from so many different mindsets and thoughts, we don't think ultimately is usable to you. I think there is a way, with some thought and discussion, that you could get at some of the information that you need. We report an awful lot of financial data, an awful lot of student data to the department. Also, I think we could sit down and figure out a way to answer those key questions and get you that information in a way that it actually would be usable. Right now, 350 of these reports, I would make the argument, are not very usable to you at all because they come in all different forms, sets, and varieties. So is this something that could be done in a better way? Yes. Would it take some time to put it together and some thoughtfulness? Yes.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, I see the commissioner is still here. I have a question for her.
Please approach Senator Commissioner Segrin.
So, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Segrin, these reports all come to you. How useful have they been for some of the deliberations that you make and recommendations you make?
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, the data that we collect has not been helpful.
So, Mr. Chairman, would you tell us why that is not the case?
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, because of some of the reasons that Mr. Kite articulated, that the data many times is a back of the envelope estimate. It also is very broad expectations of the estimation. It's very hard to measure an 80% passage rate. It's just very difficult to do that under the circumstances of the current law.
Thank you.
Senator Rummel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. Would it be possible for some of us to work together with the superintendents and your department to find a reasonable way to get some of the basic information that we're looking for, so that, one, it's useful to us, first of all, and two, that it isn't an unnecessary burden to the districts, because I think sometimes we're flying in the dark here.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rummel, yes, I would mention that we are in the midst of working with the Data Quality Campaign, which is a national organization. Many states are working with them on developing a longitudinal data system. We have a few elements that still need to be developed so that we can do more data collection and taking that information and using it for research purposes and analysis. So I think we have a number of things that we can do to advance, you know, our understanding of the costs and things that are needed to get us where we want to go.
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, I guess what I'm looking for, what I think we're looking for, and maybe I'm misinterpreting Senator Clark's motion here, is from the district side, some of the expenditures that they are encountering because of the way we have set up our system. So I know that I understand what you're doing about the data system, and I hope that's going well. But this is quite different, and I would just hope that we could work together and come up with a reasonable form that can answer some of the questions we're looking for.
Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think the difficulty of this is what does it take to get for a given district to get to an 80% student passage rate? Is the essence of that assumption is that it's all related to money. And I think the challenge is, what is it? What are the strategies? What is it that needs to be done? And I'm not sure that anybody is focusing in on that to determine then how much would that cost more? Can it be done with what we have now? None of those are part of that equation here. It's just a blanket thing of saying how much more money to get to 80%, and it just doesn't relate to anything that I can see that actually leads to improve student achievement.
Senator Clark.
With all due respect to Senator Pogamiller, I know that this is his baby.
Well, and Mr. Chair, I was thinking that it might be helpful if Mr. Nauman very briefly explained the history, and certainly if we are requiring school districts to be impacted, their performance, their resources, what they can and can't do, all kinds of things by the high-stakes testing, you know, it's probably helpful for us to have a better idea about what they really need. I agree with Sarah Olson. It isn't just about money, clearly. But my guess is that they have an idea about what would help get them there. So if we could, Mr. Chair, very briefly, because I know we all want to go soon, hopefully.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Clark, this provision goes back to 1998, and I actually remember it. It was added as part of the K-12 bill coming out of the Senate at that point, and the chair of the committee at that point, currently a sitting senator, had the desire to provide the legislature with some additional information that when education organizations come to the legislature and ask for more money, he was at that point asking them, yes, but how much? And the chair's belief at that point was that it would hopefully equip the legislature with some information that once you know the price of a good or service, in this case the price of education, you could more adequately make a decision about is that a good deal? And if you had a price, and parenthetically, we do deal with this notion when we deal with the adequacy notion. You know, how much is adequacy? And this is a bit of a proxy for that. It may be an imperfect one, and there's some technical fixes to make it work that reside in the original. But if you had a price, the chair's notion at that point was the legislature could decide whether to pay that price, whether it wanted to change expectations and reduce the price, or maybe adjust the delivery system. And that was the debate at that time.
Thank you, Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chair, I think the debate continues. I think about the work group that worked so hard over the interim trying to come up with things, it was still felt like we were kind of shooting in the dark. And back to Senator Olson's point, clearly part of it has to do with practice as well as cost. But if we're getting any information, it's hard for us to make decisions.
Senator Clark renews her motion to delete Section 45. In effect, we would continue to have this report for reasons stated. Senator Olson, did you have a
did we pass the earlier amendment, or did you add that to this?
No, we passed it.
Yes. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion is not adopted.
Mr. Chair, I hope that Senator Rummel's idea of working with the commissioner in the interim gets taken up, because we really do need to get usable information.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask a question of Senator Clark? Looking at your changes without knowing what all these sections are, of the restructuring between the office and the department.
Senator Olson, are we returning to the
A35? Yes, just a question about it. You know, I know that you were trying to improve the making seamless the movement from the K-3 into the rest of the system. I'm just wondering if this in fact does that. Now you're pulling both positions, and I don't know if this is going to become like a new department that will handle its own. Have its own financial resources. I know you earlier said that this wasn't going to cost any more money, but how does this work toward those ends?
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, this was just this should have been in the earlier amendment with the office. If we're creating an office, they actually have to oversee the funding, and we have to transfer the funding into the office. So the idea was that we use existing personnel. Perhaps there'd be a new director, but they would be managing the funds. Somebody else should be managing the funds if they're overseeing the programs. So it actually is the pre-K. It's an Office of Early Learning. And, of course, we want to be working to be blending with the school-based pieces. But right now we have both Department of Human Services and the Department of Education that have these accounts. And at one point we had the Department of Children and Family and Learning that had those accounts, but they were within education, and they were challenged to be given the attention maybe they deserved in light of larger K-12 concerns. So the whole notion from the Early Childhood Caucus is that we have an office that is focusing on the needs of our earliest learners, our young children, as it relates to child care through Head Start, school readiness, ECFE, things like that. And our proposal has a director that is responsible to the two commissioners so that they are still going back and being rooted in both of those concepts. So it's not a cabinet level. But they would be responsible for the accounts.
So, Mr. Chairman, but you aren't moving anything from the Human Services?
No. That would take place at a later time. I believe that the other body may be doing that, but we don't have jurisdiction over that, so no. Eventually, yes, but we are not doing that tonight.
All right. Any other amendments to Senate File 1328?
Senator Chairman. Yeah. Chairman, I've got three very brief related amendments. You can hand them out all at once, 18, 19, and 20, and then I have an oral amendment that I'd like to offer as well.
That's four.
It is four, but they're very simple. We'll just take quick votes. We'll just vote on them real quick and be done.
When I asked for amendments, Senator Rummel, you raised your hand up, and then was there another hand that I missed?
And, Mr. Chairman, the first three, A18, A19, and A20, are all related to the early childhood section, starting on pages 138. But the first, the A18 amendment refers to a section on page 140, line 17 to 20, and the amendment is simply to delete that portion of the bill. And this is a portion of the bill that talks about
Excuse me, Senator Hand. The amendment that Senator Hand is dealing with right now,
we haven't got,
is the A18 amendment.
A18 amendment.
And that's found on page 140.
Page 140.
And I think the amendment, all three amendments are being handed out, so there'd be a kind of a rustling of paper.
Okay.
So, Senator Hand, on the A18 amendment.
And members, these are, I'll try to go through these quickly. They're not very complicated. The A18 amendment is seeking to remove lines 140.17 through 140.20. And this is a section of the bill that deals with quality standards, talking about a provisional rating system and the things that are needed for approval to receive this provisional quality rating. And the first item is the one that I'm seeking to delete. And the reason for it is that this item, number one, says that these programs have to use research-based curricula aligned with education standards, so forth, approved by Department of Education, Department of Human Services, and consultation of Minnesota Learning Foundation. I think that that is a criteria that is unnecessary and onerous, and I'm not sure that we want to tie existing programs to that criteria. So I'm just going to very simply ask that we adopt the amendment and delete that section of the bill.
Senator Clark.
Mr. Chair, members, I suppose this won't be a big surprise. I will be voting no on this, and I hope others will. This is a pretty key component. We are trying to make sure that we are utilizing curricula that is research-based, aligning with the education standards is something we've been working on with MDE to be making sure that as our kids are getting ready for kindergarten, that it does align with the kindergarten readiness standards. I believe this is an EdWatch amendment, and I know that Dr. Ephraim doesn't like any of this, and I understand that, but this is a pretty important part of this that's been worked on for a while.
On the A18 amendment, all those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign?
No.
No.
Motion does not prevail.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hamm.
Could we take up the A19 amendment? Maybe we'll have better luck with this one. And
Senator Hamm.
Mr. Chairman and members, this is found on page 138, and this goes to something that Senator Olson and Senator Clark were talking about earlier. And this is deleting the inclusiveness of this language that says that all children have to be this and all children are ready for school. And further on line 30 of page 138, referring to both public and private, we want to delete the private so that it would refer to public school only. And going over to page 139, there's another all, including ensuring all children are fully ready for kindergarten. And then on page 139, line 11, deleting the statewide as a modifier for the quality rating. So, again, trying to avoid the danger that these inclusive statements can bring in some potential harm to the existing private early childhood providers.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Hand, just a I'm not the literary technician, but by removing the all, it seems like it's still inclusive.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
We've already done line 1.3. Yes, we have.
No, I'm sorry.
Let's go. Dr. McClay.
Mr. Chair and members, on page the A35 amendment that was adopted deleted the all on lines 20 and 25, and then on line 22 deleted all children and inserted they, so you can strike line 1.3.
Mr. Chairman, I would modify my amendment to reflect that.
Senator Hand incorporates those changes into his amendment. Senator Clark.
Mr. Chair, actually, Senator Olson and I talked about the all, and I actually talked to Dr. Ephraim about it, too, on the pre-kindergarten allowances. It's actually pretty important. That one stays. It's for a different reason. We don't want the department picking between kids for the allowances. The question is, are they income eligible or not? There's not some group of kids within that income eligibility that are more worthy than others, or some in some settings that are more worthy than others. If I've got a child and I want it to go to my church preschool, I should be able to do that. We don't want the department deciding. So, Senator Hand, I don't think you want that. And then statewide is actually, again, another pretty important thing. We are moving. The Early Childhood Caucus has recommended that we move towards a statewide framework, an optional statewide framework, to help parents have a better idea of both public and private settings that choose to participate. This is the rating system. The entities do not have to participate. They may, if they choose to participate, they are rated. It would go to statewide. That is the point of the whole thing. And again, parents do not have to utilize that if they do not wish to.
Senator Hand.
Mr. Chairman, and just again, there are some, and I may count myself among them, that are not clear yet that we need to have the quality rating as it is outlined here. But if we are going to have it, I think this amendment would provide some protection to allow the current private providers to avoid what some of us might feel to be regulation that is unneeded and unwanted. So I would encourage adoption of the amendment.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Bonhoeff and then Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hand, I've been a strong advocate for this because it's been very important to me as we proceed with allowances that parents have a choice of where they bring their kids, and the only way they can use the allowance is in a quality setting. And so I want to make sure for example, people may not agree with me, but the faith-based preschools, I want those to be an option for the parents who get these scholarships. And so they wouldn't be able to take their kids to these places if we hadn't deemed them high quality, because that has to be the lens through which we have some oversight if the state is providing money. We want to make sure those parents are not just pocketing that money and then, you know, not putting their kids in quality care. And so the quality rating system is an attempt to tie giving the funding towards accountability of where the kids are. And so if we take out the private, then in essence we're telling these parents that they can't take their kids to these private places, which I think is critical to our intention.
And Mr. Chairman, and I think that's part of the concern, is that once you take the money, then you are required to conform to the standards that are outlined or haven't been yet outlined but will be,
right.
And there's great concern about that. And so that's the point.
Senator Clark.
I'd actually like to make an amendment to the amendment after consultation with Senator Olson. We do actually believe 1.5 and 1.7 are alls that could go away, and I would like to strike everything else. So I would delete lines 1.4 and 1.6, and then I think that the all at least makes sense. I personally oppose the other, but so I don't know if you'd rather divide it or how you want to do it, Mr. Chair.
Okay, a division would probably be an easier approach.
I would move to accept
yes.
1.5 and 1.7.
Okay, Senator Hand, would you like to divide the motion?
Mr. Chairman, I don't care to, but if someone wishes to, I'm okay with it.
Senator and Clark
divides
the amendment, and the first, which the division would be 1.4 and 1.6 together, and then the remaining part.
Yes, and I would move the remaining part first because that's probably the easier one.
Okay, so we are voting on lines
from Senator Hand's position.
1.5 and 1.7. Is that your choice, Senator Hand?
Mr. Chairman, that's fine, and just would like to remind members that the proper vote is aye. So
yeah, Senator Hand, in this case, I agree with you.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Now the motion is on 1.4 and 1.6. Senator Clark.
And, Mr. Chair, in this case, I would respectfully disagree with Senator Hahn and say the proper vote would be nay. This really defeats a lot of the work, the reason behind moving to a quality rating system. We want to make sure it's available statewide, that it shouldn't just be some of our urban areas that can participate, but our rurals can, and that we should want to allow the private market as well as those who are participating in public. That goes back to what Art Rolnick has been talking about all along. Again, it's voluntary. People can participate or choose not to.
All right, on that portion of the amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail.
And Mr. Chairman, and then this one will be even easier. The A20 amendment. And this is on page 141. Yeah. And I think we've dealt with this previously, maybe not this year in the committee, but this the language on line 141.30, the modifier social and emotional, I think that those are terms that are vague and really are not measurable in any meaningful way, I think, and so I don't think it's appropriate as modifiers for this, and so I'm asking that they be deleted.
Senator Hahn moves the A20 amendment. Senator Clark.
Just very quickly, remember this is department language that was brought forward. It is used very typically. Again, I know EdWatch opposes it, but at this point, lots of people, including parents of children with autism, believe that these are important components.
Science, too.
Okay.
Any other?
Dr. Ephraim, I have my eye on that clock.
Yes, sir.
And I know there's a stack of amendments behind me, too. So extremely
brief, Mr. Brief. Chairman. Thank you, Karen Ephraim from EdWatch. All I would say is that we do not do the state does not control social and emotional outcomes for K-12. They should not be doing it for early childhood when every major expert, individual, and group admits that you cannot accurately screen and diagnose social and emotional problems in young children. That includes the World Health Organization, the Surgeon General, the National Center for Infant and Early Childhood Health Policy, the chairman of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry for the National Institutes of Mental Health. This is not the role of the state. Please delete it.
On Senator Hahn's A20 amendment, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign?
No.
No.
Motion does not prevail.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Hahn.
I have one last, my oral amendment, and this one should be very easy as well. Page 74, this has to do with charter schools, and we had some discussion about this again earlier. Paragraphs K, L, and M, this is pertaining to the restrictions on where charter schools may open. Many of us believe that this language is not necessary because the amount of time it takes to start a charter school is sufficient to, I think, deal with the concerns that this language is trying to address. And so I think that it is problematic in the sense that it may be a discouragement for people who are looking to start charter schools. There's one in particular in my district that is looking to start up. Now, there's not a closing down of a school there, but if there were and this language were in place, I think it would be an impediment for the people to do the development work. So I'm just having my oral amendment would be to delete paragraphs K, L, and M starting on line 74.3 and extending over to 75.7.
Okay, that's the motion. Senator Salzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Hahn, as I've mentioned to you, I have been open to working with people on this issue, but I do think that in situations where school districts are closing schools due to district consolidations or demographic changes, there should be some reasonable provisions to ensure Responsible financial decisions are made that impact both taxpayers and students, and that communities have the ability to adjust to these changes. And this is really on a case-by-case basis. And there really has been general agreement between all the stakeholders that I have talked to that it is reasonable to provide some sort of accommodation to address these specific issues. And I have worked and will continue to work on that. But completely stripping that out does not really acknowledge that. And I think I've shown some good faith efforts to try to put in at least some, you know, provisions. And we can do some more work on that. But frankly, I need to have people who will work with me on that. And I think that the school districts have you know, acknowledged that. I've worked with the charter school advocates. We don't want to stop good charter schools from opening. And yet at the same time, we also represent our districts, and we should not be putting policies in place that perhaps are a disincentive to making good decisions too that impact students in their district and taxpayers. So I will continue to work on this issue. I think that the language that's in there now, the fact that there is a waiver process, districts, and there are some districts right now that are working with charter schools to open schools in their community, that this doesn't prohibit them. But I think we've got a really good starting place to continue this particular conversation. So okay, I would oppose the amendment.
On Senator Hand's motion to delete on page 74, line 74.30 to page 75, line 7.75.7. That motion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The same sign?
No.
Motion does not prevail.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Hand, you were not the last. Mr. Chair and committee members, sent the 833 amendment.
It's been a long day. Senator Rummel moves the A33 amendment.
And while that's being passed out, you'll recall that last year we had a report card bill, and while it passed the Senate, it was controversial because there was not total agreement between the authors and the department. And so many, many thanks to the department, first of all. The commissioner and Dr. Mattson and so many people over there continue to work with the Senate author and the House author and the stakeholders and the university on the growth model. And that's all this bill is. Remember, last year, the Senate report card bill was just the growth model, and it has no fiscal note to it. Sometime between October and November, consensus was reached for what the growth model will look like and all the mathematics and psychometrician stuff that goes behind it. And then between November and just a few weeks ago, we did a great deal of work, and a lot of the work fell on the department and testing folks in working on the definitions. Earlier in the session, I hope you can remember that Dr. Mattson and the commissioner presented the growth model to the committee. We had, a whole session on just the growth model. What you have before you in the amendment is simply the language that describes the growth model that was presented. There was 100% consensus between the stakeholders. If you could look at my emails on just this particular bill, I think there must be over 1,000 emails. This thing has been wordsmithed to death. So I want you to know that the words have been carefully vetted and reviewed and vetted and reviewed. Section 14 of the amendment is all the definitions that are used. And they have been vetted. Section 14, subdivision 1, are definitions. Then you go down to section 18. And this is what puts the growth model and the reporting in line with the standards. I might have to have Dr. McQuay help me if I'm getting this wrong.
Dr. McQuay.
Mr. Chair and members, I'll start off where Senator Roman left off. The Section 19 has to do with the Office of Educational Accountability, and it includes in elements that office should annually report, although that office doesn't currently exist and is not funded. Section 20 at the bottom of page 3 includes student performance data and statistical adjustments, and that just clarifies growth levels and strikes regional because those data are collected on a school, district, and statewide level, conforming to what the department is doing, and strikes the requirement that the commissioner acknowledged the impact of significant demographic factors because that is not included in the agreement. Section 21 is the clarification that progress is growth and goes through that statute and just clarifies that growth is what is expected to be reported here. And subdivision 2 clarifies that this is the federal expectations portion, not to be confused with the state expectations. And subdivision 3 on page 5 sets the state growth target and other growth measures, and the way the House bill was is that there was other course other state measures, including rigorous coursework and a student engagement index, and these were not included in this amendment because of the cost. Section subdivision 4 then on page six clarifies the annual report to the public that the commissioner is required to do, and then also must report best practices learned from those schools. Subdivision 5 makes a technical change and adds a comma. and then the effective date there is that subdivision 3, the growth model, applies to the previous or the school year that we're in right now because the department did roll out the growth model in subdivision 4. The annual report is effective for the 2011-2012 school year. On page 7, the school report cards, it just lists what is included in the school report card, and that being the growth model. And I would just ask that Senator Romo maybe incorporate a technical amendment here. I neglected to take out that the student engagement indicator and the school safety indicator is included in the report card, and so I would ask that to conform with what Senator Rummel had asked the amendment to look like, that the new language on 7.7 to 7.9 be stricken.
Mr. Chair, I'll move that.
Senator Rummel includes that in her amendment, that correction.
And then, Mr. Chair, the paragraph goes on to list what else is included in the report card, and that being staff characteristics excluding salaries, student enrollment demographics, district mobility, and extracurricular activities. And then subdivision 2 clarifies that adequate yearly progress data that is collected and reported on the report card. And that concludes the amendment. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, on page 8.2, there's a deletion of 120B.362, and this is the value-added program.
Okay. On Senator Rummel's A33 amendment, the growth model, Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, I was wondering if the department would just concur that this is a reflection of exactly what that presentation was, which we were very excited about. I remember seeing it, and I just want to hear from the commissioner.
Mr. Chair and members, yes. This is language that we have worked on with Senator Rummel and with Representative Breinert, and we are in full agreement with this language.
Senator Bonham.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rumel, congratulations. This is 2 years, and this is an outstanding accomplishment.
Well, the congratulations go to the department, though. The department really bent over backwards and worked for it with. They were very patient with us because we were learning a lot along the way. So I just want to thank again the department for all they put into to this particular bill.
Thanks. Some major major achievements. Some, yes. Take a lot of time and a lot of effort. So, Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know if all the amendments are gone, but I was sitting here reflecting.
We have to vote on this.
Oh,
yes.
I'm sorry.
On the A33 amendment, Senator Therese Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Rumel, I have a question on page 7. I don't know if you really want to do this. Line 723, and it's the school performance report card data. This will prevent us from doing research on this, because one thing I believe, I am not sure about this, but the department may tell me that I'm incorrect, and I hope I am. The report card is different from report card data. And if you make this non-public data, this data will not be used for research.
Yes.
And we really need to use data for research, I think.
Dr. McCoy?
Mr. Chair and Senators Ray, I think the department will hopefully comment on this, but I believe they have a method for rolling out the data that does not compromise a student's identity.
please give your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Michelle Weber with the Department of Education, and this does not change what we are able to do at the department. When we roll the data out, and we do have certain categories where we hide it if the number is too low and would compromise the student's identity.
Thank you.
All right. On Senator Rummel's motion, the A33 amendment as amended, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Are there any other amendments that members have? Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you'll indulge me one more time on page 127, I'm going to try to give us some flexibility and some relief and not cost us any more money in our budget.
127.
This is on the review.
Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is on the review and comment once again. Round three. Page 127, line 7, oral amendment.
Senator Scogin moves to reconsider
the deletion of Section
5.
Right. That's right. We didn't just change it. We deleted it.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Senator Scogin.
All right. Let's go to line 7 on page 127. After sight. Insert, if it has a capital loan outstanding or $1.4 million, per site, if it does not have a capital loan outstanding, comma.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Mr. Nauman.
I think it would be important to, on line 127.6, reinstate $500,000 and to strike the new, which I think we amended to 1.4.
I would incorporate that in my oral amendment.
Okay. We're going to ask Mr. Nauman to repeat the full amendment.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I think I have most of it.
Okay. Mr. Nauman.
And I think that it's being handed to me so that I get it right. Mr. Chairman and members, on line 127.6, reinstate $500,000 and eliminate 1.4, which is the new language per an earlier amendment from this evening. On line 127.7, after sight, insert the following. No, insert this new language that I'm about to read. if it has a capital loan outstanding, or $1.4 million per site if it does not have a capital loan outstanding.
Okay. On that provision, and members, I believe the reason for this, you probably already, I might have not been here when that discussion came up, but we ended up, after we put that in place, found out that there was a fiscal note. Yeah. And so this helps avoid that.
Mr. Chairman, I think what we're doing here is the fiscal note was generated by school districts that do one-day bonds associated with the capital loan program. So what we're doing is limiting it, the capital loan districts, to a $500,000 number, and then for everybody else, which doesn't have a fiscal cost, we're allowing them go up, all the other districts to go up to 1.4. Okay. And if I get that wrong, I presume Dr. Melcher will alert us.
All right. On that amendment that Senator Scogin has offered, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other amendments? Members, motion.
Senator?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, just one quick. As we've seen a number of provisions from last year's policy bill resuscitated and put in this bill, I have to confess that I have been badgered by some of my co-authors for one of those provisions, not bullied, but badgered, to ask the Education Committee to incorporate making ice hockey the official state sport of Minnesota. I don't know if you're willing to indulge, but it's happened for other provisions, so it would make this senator, and at least another one that has constantly, every time he sees me, I've got it going yet. Would you consider it?
Do you want to make that a motion?
Sure.
2 years ago, when we had this finance bill before us in conference committee, I think we spent more time on that provision than we Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Olson, would you consider just calling it hockey? Hockey's played on ice. The rest of them are field hockey.
Rather than saying ice hockey?
Right.
Hockey played on ice, you said?
No, just playing hockey. Hockey's played on ice.
Same language. Hockey players know what hockey is.
Let's go back to the question. Well, Mr. Chairman, there is field hockey. There's pond hockey, but pond hockey is still ice hockey.
All right. On Senator Olson's motion, whatever it is,
not hockey.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Senator Olson, you will have an opportunity to defend that tomorrow in Finance Committee. members, we do. I want to invite the Commissioner of Education to make any brief comments, and I want to just prelude that by saying we met with the Commissioner in the department. And there are several areas that we're going to continue to work on with them to adjust and make corrections where we have had areas that might not be quite adequately funded. And we need to move on without making those adjustments right now, and we will definitely be working with the department and the staff over there. So welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I know you've had a long day, so I'm going to be brief. First of all, I want to thank the Senate for considering some of the governor's initiatives and including some of them, not necessarily fully funded at his level, but appreciate the movement to look at Summer to Success, to intervene with our eighth grade students, also to consider moving forward with an online high school, virtual high school for students, also funding the Science and Math Academies for teachers. I'm disappointed that it isn't funded at the level that we asked for. It's going to be difficult for us to do the job, but we will do our best. We really appreciate the full funding for the Principal Academy because we feel that both of those supporting our teachers is very, very important, and the leadership in those schools also is critical. Yesterday, as we were all busy here at the Capitol rolling out your bill, We also were listening to Secretary Duncan as he was bringing forth some more guidance around the stabilization funds and all the stimulus funds that we'll be receiving. And I was also on a conference call with some of his counselors and advisors, and they were also giving us more information. But I want to read a few things that Secretary Duncan made in his remarks to the country. He mentioned that every dollar we spend must advance reform and improve learning. We are putting real money on the line to challenge every state to push hard and do more for its children. Now, the four reforms that they are really talking about as we look at spending our stabilization money are these: improving teacher effectiveness and ensuring that all schools have highly qualified teachers, showing progress toward college and career-ready standards and rigorous assessments that will improve both teaching and learning, showing achievement in low-performing schools, as well as intensive support and effective interventions in those schools, and fourth, gathering information on student progress, teacher performance, and college and career readiness through enhanced data systems. Our governor has been very concerned about not only putting additional money into our educational system, but really advancing the reforms that we need for the 21st century in educating our children. We are very disappointed that the QCOMP program, which is really supporting our teachers and really taking us into the 21st century with a very reform-minded pay-for-performance system, is not fully funded in the Senate bill. We also are very disappointed that his pay-for-progress has not been considered. We really feel like it does reflect the movement that Secretary Duncan and our president wants us to go, and that is really honoring the work of our teachers and honoring them for the progress that they are making towards educating our children. We also are disappointed that the K-12 funding has been reduced so substantially in the Senate bill. We're also very, very disappointed that there are now limits on our charter schools. The president has said himself that he would like to see caps taken off of charter schools in other states. And indeed, with the moratorium that we put on, that has been put on, that's going to limit the new charter schools, and also with a 3% cap on lease aid, that is going to really limit our numbers of charter schools that we can approve. If we do approve more, that lease aid is going to be prorated, and that's going to be very, very difficult for those charters that exist. So we do really feel like that is slowing down the progress on our charter schools. In regard to QCOMP, Secretary Duncan also said that we need to know whether teachers and principals are being evaluated on the basis of student outcomes, because if you're not linking student performance to teachers, you don't really know who is and who is not succeeding. We need to know if your teacher evaluation system rates almost everyone as excellent or outstanding, because if you do, then you have a grade inflation problem, and that's not helping kids or teachers. You can't effectively reward teacher excellence without these answers. We are very concerned also that there are provisions in this bill that would allow districts to continue to remain out of compliance with QCOMP and still receive compensation. We think that's unfair to those QCOMP districts that are implementing QCOMP with fidelity, and we strongly oppose that provision. We also are very concerned with the reductions in our assessment program. We also want to advance and work with you, and indeed I want to thank Senator Rummel, because we've had a really good process of working thoughtfully in what a growth model should look like and looking at multiple measures for our students. We want to move towards a better and more common sense process for our high school students and graduation requirements. We want to be able to measure the progress of our students towards career and college readiness. We don't want to have hammers, but we also want to have motivating conditions for our students. And so we want to move towards that. And the governor had provided money for us to make that transition in a thoughtful manner. However, with this reduction in the assessment budget, we feel very, very concerned that we may not be able to meet those new opportunities, as our President and Secretary Duncan want us to do. We're also very concerned about the tax increases that districts will be facing in the future. Now, I've said a number of things that probably are not very pleasant to hear, but the governor and I are very, very passionate about moving our educational system into the 21st century. We do think that we're at a crossroads in education, and we need to work together to make sure that we can advance these reforms. And I know that every one of you sitting here at the table has that same passion and wants to do that. As I've listened to the discussion over the last two days, I'm very, very respectful of all of the things that you want to do for our kids. There are people here who are very passionate about closing the achievement gap. And there are people here who want to make sure that our kids are college and career ready. And we want to look at multiple measures, and we want a fair system. And so I hope that we can work together as we advance and come to a conclusion in this session. We are facing some tough economic times here in this country and in this state. And we can come together, and we can do this. Finally, Secretary Duncan concluded his remarks by saying, "Now, for those states that move fastest and furthest toward these reforms, not only will the state stabilization funds, but also with the Title I funds, they may win a share of a $5 billion Race to the Top fund, which will be awarded later in the year." So I urge the Senate, to think thoughtfully as they move forward and as we come to working together with the House and the executive branch, that we'll keep those reforms in mind, that we will think about how we can advance these very, very special nation-leading things that we have all worked together for so many years bipartisanly. And I also thank you very much, because I know I've been in your chair for the long time that you spend deliberating very, very thoughtfully, for the time that you spend away from your families. And I want to honor and thank you for that time and commitment.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Segrin. Members, the motion that I would ask would be that Senate file 1328 as amended would be recommended to be passed and re-referred to the full Committee on Finance, and then with the instructions that as the staff works tonight to put the amendments and everything together, that we give them the authority to make the technical corrections to make it make sense of some of what we've done, which they always seem to do. So,
Mr. Chair,
Senator Colt,
this is a big bill, and I'd like to request a roll call.
A roll call has been requested,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a general comment here, and let me preface it by saying how enjoyable I think this committee, this division, has been, given the climate that we are in. However, and you know there's going to be a however here, this bill is not going to journey out of here, I think, with much, if any, support from our side of the aisle. And I just want to, while acknowledging the hard work and particularly the policy language in here, I think the fundamental difficulty for this bill is that it's the biggest part of the budget. It's part of a budget plan that asks more of taxpayers and turns around and gives less to schools. So we're asking more of Minnesota families. We're raising the cost of doing business. But we're going to give less to our schools. And I don't think that reflects the priority. I'm not sure it reflects your own priorities, Mr. Chair, about where K-12 should be. But you know we have a fundamental philosophical disagreement with the across-the-board regime that's been used on this budget, and I think it hurts the most. I think that across-the-board cut hurts the most in this division at this table, and and we can do better, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure that this framework would pass the House. Clearly, the governor would have major reservations with it, so I think we'll be back here doing something else at some time, and we'll reach out and work hard.
Senator Hand.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Koch has asked for a roll call vote, and I just would like to know if two of my colleagues will join me to invoke Rule 12.10 of the Senate rules and have this vote be put into the journal.
Mr. Chair, I'd move 1328 first of all.
Okay. Senator Saxhog moves that 1328, as amended, be recommended to be passed, re-referred to the full committee on finance, and with the staff instructions that I mentioned. Senator Hand has requested that the roll call vote be put in the journal. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I think the rule requires three people to make that request, and I make that request, and if two others would do so, then I would so request it.
Senator Gerlach, Senator Koch, we'll look at that rule. That's not familiar to me right off the top of my head. So as we just check the contents of the rule, I would just want to thank all the committee members. You spent an awful lot of seat time. I think if you calculated the hours that we spend here in some of the committees, you probably should have some kind of a degree or some kind of diploma for it. But it's a real education, I think. Unfortunately, I think, as a number of you have mentioned, we have this deficit that we're dealing with, and it's a real problem. It's not fictitious. The governor understands that way back in last year in December. I mean, his unallotting the local government aides to bring the budget into balance, and obviously the forecast was a real, even though it's a projection, it was real, and that forecasted deficit grew, and so it's something that the legislature has to be the one to address that and hopefully end up working with the governor and the House. The approach that we took, as I mentioned when we first started discussing this bill, is that without having participation from all sectors of our finance, we would narrow the base to the point where it would be extremely difficult to ever balance that budget. No one mentioned that the bill that you have before you does not use the shift, delay in payments. If you look at the proposals that are coming from other parts of our legislative and executive branch, they're using, I've heard the figures of $1.8 to close to $2 billion in shifts. Now, shifts are only one-time money and not really curing an ongoing problem. And I think that's a very positive thing in terms of this proposal. Whether that ends up being the end result, we have to wait and see. But if you think back to 2003, when we put the $1.2 billion shift in place, the buyback of that shift took us almost the full tenure of the governor's, almost 6 years it took to buy back, which put pressure on all the efforts to try to put some additional resources into education as well. So that's a very positive thing. I think the reforms that we have in here are positive, and I want to thank again those who have worked on all different aspects of it. Obviously, the piece that's the most difficult to swallow is the one that Senator Michelle mentioned, and that's the dollar reductions that are made. Again, the $973 million was offset with federal funds to the tune of roughly 3.2%. That is being offset roughly to about half of that amount. It varies from district to district by the increase in Title I and IDEA funds. And so we have mitigated some of that cut that we're proposing to do. There's probably a lot of other things that we could have done, but we tried to remove mandates. We've tried to allow flexibility. A few mandates crept in here and there, but hopefully they didn't affect some of the flexibility that districts have requested. The other major piece that I think we're going to hear a lot of discussion about, and we didn't dwell on it as much now as we have in the past, but I think it is a component of education funding in probably 49 out of the 50 states. When you look at education funding in all of the other states, it's a very even mix, but a mix of aid and levy. And that levy component is a real problem if you rely too much on that levy. We found out that funding education by referendum is not the best solution for education funding. So we have to move away from, I think, the referendum as the tool for funding. And in here, by establishing a consolidated levy, which is like a general education levy, it builds a very sound foundation, I think, for the education funding of our schools in the future. It obviously doesn't solve problems right now, but I think as you go forward, the opportunity for education, not having the peaks and valleys in funding, will be dramatically minimized by having that tool in place. And Senator Olson and Senator Bonhoff and many others are going to say, but this is going to raise property taxes in my area. Believe me, I've gone through the runs. It's going to raise property taxes in rural communities way more than it's going to raise property taxes in yours. Because if you look at the runs, we have taken farmland off of the general referendum. We have taken seasonal recreation off of the referendum. I'm going to have a very difficult time in that tax committee because we have some problems to solve in that tax area. But I'm willing to try to tackle that, and I think, in the end, as we move forward, and I think the governor would agree with me, he has in the past a couple years, that we cannot sustain 100% funding from the state. And I'm not saying that more money will do it alone, because that is not true. We need to have high standards. We need to have high expectations. And we need to have a lot of things in place, but the state alone cannot sustain all of the education funding, and nor should it. So, Mr. Chairman. Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I really appreciate working with you, and I think this committee has been one of the most thoughtful that I've had a privilege of serving on. But I have to take exception with you on that last point. And you still have some time to convince me otherwise, but the undoing of the property tax reform and moving back to a reliance on the property tax is really, really tough. And it may affect everybody, but taking that off the formula, I think, was part of the agreement to let the property tax be a local tax for our local units of government. And if I were to support that move, I'm not sure if I would be welcome back in my district or through most of the metro area. But I just want to share one paragraph of a email that I just got yesterday or the day before. Here is my personal story. I'm a retired public school teacher living alone in my home, a modest house on a small parcel of Lakeshore. I've lived here since 1971. My property taxes are now over $7,000, which is fully one half of my annual teacher's pension. I repeat, my property tax is one half of my annual pension. I am now in danger of losing my home, along with many other constituents of your district. I love my home, raised my son here, and have worked very hard over the years to maintain it. This will drive property taxes up. And I think you need to give very serious thought before you pursue it. You know, I hate to say if that runs into trouble in the tax committee, I will appreciate that. But this is the tough part of this bill for me.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Olson. The way the bill is currently before you, there are no property taxes in the first biennium.
I know.
So.
I understand.
All right. On the motion that Senator Wieger...
Oh, actually, I think Senator Saxhawk then.
Oh, Senator Saxhawk. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Clark.
My understanding is because we are not a standing committee that the roll call will not be reported in the journal. It would be appropriate motion, Senator Hand's motion would be an appropriate motion in the Finance Committee, but we're a division of a standing committee. We are not a standing committee. So the roll call is appropriate, but the rest is not. We've been advised
okay.
by counsel.
All right. So... roll call has been requested, and Senator Saxhawk makes that motion. The clerk will take the roll.
Senator Bonoff.
Aye.
Anderson.
Aye.
Clark.
Aye.
Dahl.
Aye.
Phoebe.
Aye.
Gerlach.
No.
Han.
No.
Koch.
No.
Michelle.
No.
Olson.
No.
Roebling.
No.
Rummel.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Saxhawk.
Yes.
Skogan.
Yes.
Therese Ray.
Aye.
Wieger.
Aye.
Senator Stump.
Yes. The motion prevails 12-6. Thank you very much, committee members, and
Mr. Chair.
Senator Wieger.
I just want to thank you for your leadership, and also let's salute the staff for burning the midnight oil and all they did.
Very good. Thank you.
Committee is adjourned.
Okay. I believe it's over for another session.
Yeah, thank you for being in there.
Yep, I got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No.
Yeah, I'm coming back from the office. I can walk out.
My wife went down there. She's down there now.
Oh, she took it away.
Is it a grandchild?
Yeah. For our youngest baby. She's about 10 years younger than our other.
In a
place that's so tumble.
Okay. So, yeah. Your wife is not
she'll have, yes.
So that's what she's keeping your family.
Well, she just came through late last night, stayed overnight in the apartment, then after session, we had lunch with her, and then she took off. So she's down there. Yeah.
Well, I hope so. Well, sorry about this, but I just.
I'm concerned about dropping taxes tonight.
I appreciate her.
It's, you know, it's way out of.
It is.
Yes, it's stable. Reality is its values. What's happening here is that, you know, the property values are supposedly not, but they're not. Well, it's the value. That's the. If we could get away from our value base. I can't.
California has a deal.
Yes, that's Prop 13.
Think of that, actually. He says this.
I really don't see. Well, this is not fun.
Because you can't afford to move.
That should be other things.
Well, you're both.
Maybe it makes more sense to wait till it passes on a bulk versus asking Jen to do it tomorrow.
Amanda, you. If I never put it on the bill, because I have to. So.
That was my question. I'm going to do it. You're comfortable.
I think.
Well, I. Put on the floor after final passage. Yeah. Then I can just say, see, you can pass.
That voice fade.
Yeah, I think
it was a I was taking the leap from some of those strong arguments that you were making.
I didn't, you know, the voice won't. I thought, you know, different.
I think it'll be fine.
Okay.
But see, you'll need your extra push.
Yeah, well, you have my
rule. Okay, so. Good. Okay, so I'll do it there then.
The more you put into it, the more cultist and crazy it's like. This is going up like that. It's like, I think you're generally, I'll be just how would we get a vehicle instead of going down and having that go with that? Just kind of like parking lot. It locks in the compensatory and drops this part. Like a spare to get a capital to the car.
Hugging. That's vlogging. Let's just make sure.
And then, there are regional centers.
Right. Well,
demonic.
Remember. Okay. It is nice if they have it.
Tomorrow.
That's fine with me.
No.
Thanks. Yes, yes. I think I'll.
Is this the first?
No. We have four now. This is our daughter's. She's kind of our baby. About 10 years. Yeah, yes. Yeah, right. But you have.
Careful.